Blog Talk Radio.
Caller from the 917, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Hello, good evening, good night.
Black First Sister.
This is the first time that I'm hearing of your show. I found
it's a broadcast.
About it today.
Let me find out here. What is your name? Where are you calling from?
Lahiri from Brooklyn.
Hello from Brooklyn. And what's on your mind, black woman?
I heard your past shows from 2014, and I was very pleased because you are speaking the language of black power, and you are acting on it, and you are sharing, educating young folks and older folks in the realities of the war that we are involved in, that we've been involved in since the crossover. It hasn't stopped. What I want to do is I wanted to add on something, if I may.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I'm an author. And right now I'm just finishing an essay on the consciousness of black power. Now, when you're talking black power, as you described it correctly, in addition, we take on the spirituality of black power, which is far different than going to church and clapping for a white Jesus or having anything to do with religion at all. Now you come into the dimension where white people are beating us to zero because what they've done is they've given us one God and going behind us and taking all of our gods and our spiritual wealth dominate this 21st century. This is the century where you either wake up or you don't make it, and we will make it. I will make it. I know you will. Now, in the spiritual dimension of the factor of black power, you get an island like Hispaniola. On this island came the original people of the world, and they left their footprints on this island with black power and the spirituality of it as a weapon, not for you to be poor and destitute and complaining, but for you to empower and gain wealth and put your footprints on this earth as you are the original person of the earth. Now, let me break down what that is.
Okay.
Can we go into Hispanic?
I'm so glad you say this is the first time that you tuned in to our broadcast. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yes, I was asking you. This is the first time you tuned in to our broadcast?
Yes, sir. And I did. What okay. I did is when I found out about you earlier, I went back to listen to your 2014 shows.
Okay, magnanimous. That's really, really great. Let me explain to you what we do here, because maybe you didn't hear while you were on hold. There's something that we don't do here, and I say we because most of these people who are listening right now, we've got hundreds of people listening live, thousands of people who'll be listening here very, very shortly, and then thousands more once it gets to YouTube. We as black people tend to get bogged down in detritus. One of the things that we have gotten detritus, D-E-T-R-I-T-U-S, detritus.
Mm-hmm.
Look it up. We get quagmired in things that don't matter. Black people have shown that we have an incredible propensity and an absolutely high talent for getting mired down in things that absolutely don't matter. We as black people go back and forth about the three things that black people spend more time getting bogged down on that are worthless and useless more than anything else. Education, and by that I mean your school systems. Not being intelligent, but schools. Politics and religion. Those are the three things that we argue over so much. And the reason that we do that is because we don't want anybody to actually point us or start counting things. That's what we do that for. I don't ever, for any reason, I never argue with anybody about their religion. They can believe whatever they want to. Now, what is a religion? A religion is if you believe that there's anything. A religion is just a belief system. Do you believe that there's anything other than this physical world that we're in right now? If you believe, if you have any, quote, higher belief than that, that's your religion.
Well, I was.
Excuse me. Because you had your chance to speak, and you spoke for a while. So let me
actually,
help you out.
Actually, I started speaking, and you interrupted me. But
yes,
you're sharing what I was saying to the
that's
one
what I'm saying.
Case, because I was
you're
not
done.
Talking about religion. I specifically
okay.
said
yes, you are.
It is not
yes,
religion.
Yes, you are, because you said spirituality, which is the code word
now,
for religion.
Now, I wanted to explain what that is.
You're
I'm
not
speaking of,
talk
if you would allow
me.
Excuse me. I cannot talk over you.
This is your first time. This is your first time. Call us. You're not going to talk over me. All right? Now, like I say, because I could do something like mute you or disconnect you. I'm not going to do that unless you talk over me again. If you do it one more time, then you actually want to hear what I'm going to say, and I'll give you the opportunity to just listen instead. If you have a spiritual system, in other words, I will say this one more time if you didn't get it. If you believe in anything other than this physical world that we live in, if you've got some set of principles that you think are more important, if you've got some set of beliefs, some set of spirituality, some set of anything, and if you don't know the definition of anything, I can't help you. If you believe in anything other than this spiritual world that we live in, then you've got a religion. You can call it and rename it whatever you want to. You can call it African spirituality. You can call it Mayat. You can call it the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. You can call it whatever you want. And what I'm saying is it doesn't matter. The richest, most prosperous people in the world are a mix of Christians, Buddhists, Transcendental Meditationists, Muslims, Africans, and atheists. Your religious, or if you want to call it that, spiritual belief system has nothing to do with how prosperous in this world you're going to be. Absolutely nothing. How you treat this world that you walk out here into, that's going to determine everything that's going to happen to you in this life. Everything. I don't have to argue with anybody over their spiritual system. Whatever your spiritual system is, I believe it. So that's what I'm getting to right now. I don't know what your spiritual belief system is, and I don't need to know. I'm not even going to ask you because I don't need to know it. Here's all I need to know. Whatever you believe spiritually, I'm down with it. I want you to answer one thing for me, though. Explain to me right now, how can we go from making $50,000 a year to making $1 million a year? Help me
okay.
out with that.
Okay. May I explain what I meant? Because I was not talking about religion. What I was
okay.
talking about
okay,
are defense systems.
I
was talking about defense, but I will answer. I will tell you how to make $1 million in the next year.
Okay, we heard about the spiritual thing before, and you just go to
I do not want to speak about spirituality. I do not want to speak about spirituality, but the defense that we have at our disposal that we are not counting, while we are counting monetary values and we are counting land and we are counting other wealth, but we do have weapons that we can use that are physically available to us, that are here, that have nothing to do with religion or anything else. But I will tell you how you can make $1 million in the next year. Now, a person who's living in the United States with a crash economic system is really counting like throwing rocks in the river. If you want to go overseas, you can come. I have thousands of acres of land that is producing, like when you come to my land, avocado ripes on the floor, mangoes, citrus, everything is there, but there is really no logistics, there is really no help, and there is really no proactive persons to assemble all of that into a nourishing like factory, into an industry, into an agriculture, and it's thousands of acres just sitting there. So if you, that's a way you can make another $1 million next year to come and own this and to furnish it and to rebuild it and to put it into action. But as I was saying before, I was not talking about religion. I was talking about
okay,
weapons that are available to us.
Yet. Okay. I'll let you go ahead. You didn't answer the question. You said 1,000 acres of seeds, and you can move
yes,
it and
that's
develop
the way
it.
You, can...
you didn't explain to us what that is. We deal in specifics here. Can you be specific?
Okay. Where,
where is this? Excuse me. Where is this land? Who is the government of this land? What is the population if I'm going to develop it, I can't make myself rich by myself. So who? What am I going to do with this land that is going to create an income? So if you can answer those three questions, that would be a great step forward.
Okay, the land is in Haiti. It's South Haiti, which is in Jacques.
Okay, the land is in Haiti. Did you say the land is
in Haiti? It's
in Haiti.
And
okay, the land
it's
is
not,
in Haiti. Okay.
It's south of Port-au-Prince.
South of Port-au-Prince. Oh,
south
that's
of
good,
Port-au-Prince.
That's the good part of Haiti, isn't it?
Well, it's green part.
Where did the earthquake happen here a few years ago? Where did that happen at?
The earthquake happened centrally in west, in the west department, which is mostly Port-au-Prince. It affected
my area. So you're saying
which
that the land that you're talking
Jacques
about Lel. Is where the earth. So the land that you're talking about is where the earthquake happened. Of that level,
no.
Everything. Okay, go ahead and finish.
No, that's not the land I'm talking about. The land I'm talking about
really
is south of Port-au-Prince, and this is up in the mountains, away from the village. So basically, you have to cross at least 6 to 7 rivers, and you have to climb a few mountains to get to that land. And further up, the land extends to at least, I would say at least 200 to 300 mountain hills up and down. Actually, cultivating on the land are different seasonal beans, mangoes, avocados, sugar canes, citrus like oranges, lemons, lime. And those are being produced in small quantities because the farmers who are on those pieces of land, they do not have either the capabilities with money or machinery or labor to just mass produce, and grains are expensive as usual, and those farmers have also negated to accept Monsanto beans or grains. So coming into
okay,
a
how
place
do you get
like
there?
That.
How do you get
how
there?
How to get to a place like that? A private car is the definite way to go. The mountains of which I'm speaking about, once you get to about the last rivers, you would have to either have a horse or develop technology that would take you to the mountains. Because
so what you're saying is there is no road to get to this land. I will own a bunch of land, but I do not actually even have a road. I can buy a car, but I can't even park my own car on the land there is what you're saying.
Well, you're looking for comfort, you can stay in the United States. If you're looking to work to make things available and readily, things are not going to be there for you as a fresh squeezed orange. Sometimes you have to bite into that orange to get the juice out. And this outside of the orange is bitter, I'm telling you. So this land is there. The people who live there, they go up and down that mountain every day. They transport commerce, like the produce that are made on top of that mountain. They come to a marketplace that is called Marbial, Marbial. In Marbial, which is a marketplace that's on the river itself, people who resell, they come there, produce for the whole entire country. So you would have at your disposal about over 10 million people. But, like I say, it's not like the juice is squeezed. It's there, and it's weighty. It's ready and waiting. Now, this is just mountain land. On the outside of that mountain land, on my grandmother's side, which is the Theodore family of Jacques Mel, I owned thousands of acres of beachside coast. So now, that who's in charge of those lands? That's the Haitian government. I cannot offer that land to you. I can offer to you mountain land that is available. That other part of land I'm fighting for. So I want to speak about the weapon that is available to people, the original people of the world, which has nothing to do with religion. And
okay.
It has been
okay. Well,
obscured with religion.
I had a few more questions.
You may finish asking me your question.
Yeah, I have a few questions about that. Okay, you've told me. And I thank you for being in such detail about that. Most people can't do what you did. So you did tell us where the land is. You did tell us who the government is. And you did tell us what to do with it. So most people can't even get that far. So I applaud you for that. That's really good. But did you hear the part was missing there? You see, the problem with Haiti, and I'm not saying that Haiti should not be developed. I am not saying that. That is not what I'm saying. So anybody who's out there living right now, I'm not saying it should not be developed. What I'm saying is that there are many reasons why Haiti is underdeveloped today. Haiti has the potential to be the next Cuba, but I'm talking about with hotels and vacation spots and stuff like that. But everything from Port-au-Prince, basically south, is problematic for a number of reasons. First and foremost, what you just said, that road situation. Now, road situation is not quite the same problem where the white folk are on the island, but they made sure that there's not a road that connects where the black folk are to where the white folk and the tourists like to come to. PBS Frontline did a great piece about this. So when you say there's some great land that's over the water and through the woods up in the mountains, that's all nice and all, but what you really just said is that you are going to have to invest millions, not thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars just to get to the land in a way that makes the land commercially viable. Because what you're talking about with pack mules and horses, we're not going to make any money like that. We need a road.
You see how you are. You see okay. Me. I've lived in
we
in
need
high
a
end
road.
Condition.
We need a road that's going to take us from where the fruit is on a truck, a big truck, to
not
the
a,
airport
you imagining,
or the market or whatever. You're going to need that before you do anything.
Okay, then that everyone wants to work with a $1 million budget. Me, I've been working in Haiti doing work like in the under. It's not even grassroots anymore because it's so underground, to where I make little money, do big major things. Okay, you're going to need money, all right, but it's not going to be millions of dollars. You're going to need a road, that's right, but with adjustments of the road you have now, you can transport up and down the mountains. The people who inhabit those mountains, they've been there since like 1600s, and they've been doing
the
with
biggest,
it.
What's the biggest truck that you're rolling down from the mountains? Because you just said here a few minutes ago.
No. The trucks can come in the marketplace. This is how it's situated. In the marketplace is the central area where the goods will be transported to the marketplace
around,
to meet the truck.
You are dancing around. The land is where the fruit and your agriculture is. We can pick all fruits and agricultures we want. How do we get the fruit and agriculture off that mountain to the market with a truck and a road?
People, mules, horses.
And how much can you carry with people, mules, and horses?
A whole lot, because you do have a whole lot of people at your disposal who are just unemployed and waiting for that. It's not, you do have those people and they love the land. That's what they're waiting for. You have a lot of people and they will carry it. Just like the Egyptians built a pyramid with
how many
people.
How many horses do you think we would need?
We would need at least 100 horses.
100 horses?
At least. A minimum.
Okay. 100 horses to go how many miles?
It would be about a 40-minute run on the horse. It's a 40-minute hike to the mountains, but on foot, and I've done it on foot. It's about a two-hour walk, hike. On the horse, it's about half an hour to 40 minutes.
Okay, it's 40 minutes on horse, which means that it would be about 15 minutes in a truck. And we would be able to carry more fruit, and by the way, refrigerate it in a truck.
All of the refrigeration can happen under the mountain where the market is, and there is plenty of them there.
Well, once you get there, yeah.
You're dealing with people who are not so advanced as you are, who have been able to make do and to have been able to get food down there and all their foods down there unharmed. As you imagine it harmed, they've been able to do it for the past 300 years unharmed. These are not Haitians who were, let me tell you, sir, about
how
these people.
The economy? How well is the economy for these people who've been doing it 300 years? Tell me how great their economy is.
The economy for those people.
What do they have to show after three centuries?
They are still keeping their land, and they are not involved with MINUSTAH occupation. They are not in the machinery of Port-au-Prince, because you are referring to Port-au-Prince as it is the heart of Haiti. No. The ideas that you get of Port-au-Prince are negative for these people. These are people who have been in the mountains since Blamana, these I don't want to say crackers, what could I say? So white supremacists were occupying Port-au-Prince and other areas of Port-au-Prince. These people were marooned on their land. Now they are still on the land. They are keeping the land. They are still producing food that nourishes not a lot of the country because they are fighting importation from Miami, importation from Santo Domingo. They are fighting against all of that. They are still holding their land and they are still keeping surviving. Okay, they are not literate. They cannot read and write like you and I can. But what they have maintained is what you don't want me to talk about, the weapon that is available that has nothing to do with religion, okay? That has nothing to do with religion and all of this talking that we do.
I've got a bunch of callers. I have a bunch of callers on the line, and we've been talking for
a long
time.
Thank you for letting me speak so long.
Stop. Stop. Good grief. This is what I mean, y'all, because y'all can leave the United States and you think black women are different overseas than they are in the United States. No, they're pretty much the same wherever you go. I was going to tell you, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody
Did you just stereotype me in your words?
Did you just
do that on your show?
No.
And then when you do that, what do you expect me to react like when you speak like that?
I didn't stereotype.
So what was that comment about? And what do you expect me to react like when you comment that way?
I didn't stereotype you. You stereotyped yourself.
No. I'm reacting to your commentary as I should, because I shouldn't let you just get off with that just because it's your show. You've done enough, O. You've gotten off with enough, and I've been graceful enough.
Did you call me a fool on my own broadcast?
What did I call you? What did you call yourself, my dear sir?
Okay. Did you say your name was Lanice?
My name is Lahini. Lahili,
okay.
Black.
Lahili. Okay,
is the color of my skin, yes.
I was
Lahini, L-A-H-I-N-Y.
I don't care if your name is Lahinya.
Listen, now you're getting very ignorant. You shouldn't speak like that. You have a faux pas, and you misspoke to me. You shouldn't speak that way.
About barren wastelands, acres and fields of mangoes and coconuts and walnuts, and only have crossed six rivers and four mountains like we're the great Kali from the WWE.
I call this speak of a weapon that has nothing to do with religion. And you did not let me speak of it because of what? You're scared of that power. And that is the heart of black power, where you can reach this physical realm and you can command at your will. And not be afraid whether your name is Black or Jason or my name is Lahini to tell you that you cannot speak to me just anyhow because you want your show to be so overcooled or you want to be such a rigid speaker that you want to deny me of some respect. I've given you all that I've been given. You know what I mean?
Anywhere. And that's why you don't have a road for 15 minutes of driving. We've got all this land, all this fruit, and you don't have
I was
have
really
a
hoping that tonight I would call and speak to a man
now.
Of reason. You do have reason, but in this topic,
you
I think I took you out of your realm.
Idea of the year.
I think I took you out of your realm because I called
I
to speak about something that's not religion. You are
enough.
Used to religion. You are used to that old-time religion. I don't think you're used to the power I'm speaking about.
So I get
you
to
feel free to hang up, okay? Because I am done.
They start.
You've
and
already been rude enough. Feel free to just hang up.
You just
the
need
phone.
To cross six
You've
rivers
been rude
and
enough.
Four
I'm not even sure I'm on the air because you also have the power to meet me.
And then they're upset when you say that's ridiculous.
I'm not even upset. I was just putting you in your place. I was hanging you in the right dresser.
Mules and horses. In the
what is wrong with horses? Because guess what? You are living in an ephemeral state, okay? The place that you're living in at any time with this new war that is coming through, you will be boomed. Where will you run to, Mr. Black Power?
You know, this is why people laugh at us as black people, because we don't come up with useful, practical ideas. This is why they
laugh. This is not an idea. This is something that exists. Ideas exist when they are in your scrotum and they are not even materialized as children. Those are ideas. When things exist and you can touch them and you live within them and people feed on them, they are not ideas. They are living state, though. That's not an idea.
I wanted to say next. I was going to allow you to tell us about this mythical, magical offense.
I am not in the magical offense. I no longer want to share anything else with you. I am done with you. You feel free to hang up on me.
Opportunity to leave. Mythical, magical, gobbledygook. And then she wants to be belligerent about her nonsense. I asked for a practical idea. Oh, it's, she told you something that you can do. Yes, you can do it. You just can't make any money at it. How much fruit can a damn horse pull? 100 horses? That means you can get everything them damn horses can use inside of one rider truck. So what it would cost us $10 in gas, we're going to be spending a couple of $100 feeding the old great mare who ain't what she used to be and 100 people to ride these horses. She didn't mention that either. Tie all the horses together. You still have to pay other people. We could do all of that stuff in one truck at a fraction of cost if you had a road. She's talking about everything except here's what we need to do to build the road. Walmart always makes sure that they build their supercenter on a main thoroughfare. Why? Because we want the ability to get our customers in and to get our product in as easily as possible. And she sat here in the 21st century and told us to use horses and pack mules. And then you all wonder why. And there are going to be a lot of you who are thinking, well, could you have been nicer about it? No. Because we need real practical ideas. She starts off with the damn spirituality crap, and then she careens straight off the road. I guess we grew up in a place that doesn't have roads. And that's what happens. Let's see if we can find somebody a little bit more sane here. Caller from the 267, you're on live with the Black Channel. From the 267, you're on live. We can hear you mumbling. I'm wondering if they're doing something that, I don't know why they're mumbling, but whatever they're doing is causing them to mumble. And that's really just creepy. Caller from the 618, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
Black First Sister, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, yes. My name is Linda Harrison. I'm calling from Illinois.
What's on your mind, woman?
Pardon me?
What's on your mind?
Oh, I was just wanted to make a response, and I hope that you and I don't get into the type of dialogue
response
that you had with the ladies from Hades.
A response to what?
Okay, I mean, even how you just responded, I mean, how you're coming off as being very rude.
Okay, why did you call me then?
I'm not trying to offend you,
okay,
Mr.
why did
Black.
You call me? I asked you what's on your mind and you want to talk about. The way you're talking is very rude. Why didn't you just go ahead and say what's on your mind?
Mr. Black, I was watching one of your videos that you made about a gentleman that you had exposed. And I was very interested in hearing what you had to say and what you were all about. But the kind of personality that he had, how rude he was, and I'm not trying, I don't want to get into a fight with you because
okay,
this is not what it's about.
Okay, you're starting off talking about people being rude. You called my broadcast to say that I've listened and I don't like it. Then why did you stay on the phone and talk to me then?
Because, by you having a radio broadcast, Mr. Black, your voice is going out to a lot of people, and you don't want to send out the same type of energy that this guy, what is his name, Mr.
I'm not concerned. My name is Black
Sadabar.
Authority. My name is Black Authority, and here's the thing, okay? I allow people to come in here. I have a limited amount of time and a lot of people who want to talk, okay? If you don't like, if you want to critique people, you need to go get a daughter or a child or a student or a piano class and do that. You don't call me
that
up to
really,
critique me on my broadcast, okay? If
Mr.
you don't
Black,
like it, you
Mr.
should
Black,
have called.
That is really,
excuse
that,
me.
Your attitude
if you don't like
really
the broadcast,
sad,
you
Black.
Had no reason to call me because you've been sitting on hold for half an
Mr.
hour.
Mr. Black,
if
you
like
are,
it,
and you're supposed to be an example.
I am an example of the kind of person who left you 20 years ago. That's what I am. I'm an example of the guy who divorced you back in the 70s. That's what I am. Listen to me very, very carefully out there, people. Let me say something to you very carefully here. To all of the hundreds of people and thousands of people who will be listening after the fact, this is not the ha-ha-he-he show. You can say I'm bald-headed. That's perfectly fine. But let me tell you something. I'm not the guy on Family Feud. I'm not the sky jock. I'm not patting you on the hand. I'm not trying to make friends over the internet. I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to tailor something that you just properly season to your taste. I do not nurture grown men, and I do not finesse grown women. I created a place where we can exchange ideas and come to resolutions, and actually learn something. Now, I gave her plenty of time to talk, and the only thing that she didn't want to do was discuss her ideas. She just wanted to whine and pitch and moan and complain. And that works fine with your husband, who you nagged into a heart attack. That works fine with your grandchildren, who can't leave you, or your daughter, who feels genetically obligated to you, or your church people who feel like the love of Jesus Christ that compels them to sit there and listen to your nonsense. This is a place where we're about empowerment, and hearing you sit there weak and mean-mouthed does not make me feel sympathetic for you. I have contempt for the weak. Let me say that one more time. Is this thing on? I do not have sympathy for the weak. I have contempt. A person who picks up a phone and immediately starts whining and complaining about what they don't like on a broadcast that they didn't pay for, on a microphone that they didn't pay for, and on an internet stream that they didn't pay for. That's that welfare office mentality, that you can walk up in here with your big fat waddling self and sit down in this thing and tell people, well, I didn't pay for none of this, and I didn't do none of this, just like I didn't pay for my housing project apartment I live in, but I'm going to tell you what I think of what's going on here, and you should listen to me. So, you paid for nothing. You did nothing. You produced nothing. You got nothing. You contributed nothing. You were asked what you thought, and you said nothing. I am very offended when somebody does that, because there are a lot of people waiting on this line who wait a very long time to talk to me, and I never get to talk to everybody, 10, 15, 20, 30 people who can't speak to me. And for all those people that have to wait so you can sit here and pitch a fit because you wish you had a broadcast that somebody, anybody gave a damn about. So you called up the guy who does have one. You can sit here and complain. You all know your grandmother has got the newspaper. I mean, we all love grandma, don't we? She's got the newspaper. She calls you up. She wants to start reading the newspaper to you. Or she calls you up and wants to start complaining about her aches and pains. Got your own aches and pains. Why do you need to hear about hers? Grandma, do you have a solution to your aches and pains? No, I just called you up so I can complain about them. Don't be surprised when I'm not very thrilled to talk to you. I'm not here to please people. I am here to give a forum where you can disseminate ideas. I gave the first caller 20 minutes to absolutely ramble. And that was 20 minutes that somebody with some sense could have been talking. And I wonder if the people with some sense appreciate giving away 20 minutes of airtime to somebody who ultimately had absolutely nothing to say. No, ma'am. I don't nurture grown men, and I don't finesse grown women. I expect adults. That's what I expect. And if you can't do that, go listen to somebody else, somebody who doesn't actually have anything to say. When I tell you on this microphone you're on live, I expect for you to bring intelligent black thought. If you can't do that, you picked the wrong damn number to call, let me tell you. For everybody on the line who thinks that this is the entertainment hour and we're going to sit here in a circle and discuss our feelings and whine and complain about the things we don't like, let me tell you, you picked the wrong damn broadcast to do it on. You picked the wrong one. You have been fairly warned. Caller from the 951, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 951, you're in your pocket or something. I think I've seen that number before, as a matter of fact. They stay on the road or something. Not trying to beat up on people. I'm just saying. Come on, guys. Let's get our act together here. It's my night for crazy little old ladies, I guess. I don't know. Not beating up on anybody. I swear I'm not. But I'm not going to sit here and try to nurture grown people. Grown people should come to the party ready. I expect that. Caller from the 313, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, I'm calling from Detroit.
What's your name?
Vaughn.
You could have said that. You called him before. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I got an idea. Hey, listen, here in Detroit, which is 85% black, but only 1% of the commercial property is owned by black folks. It's just, we have a crash in the city. Well, the whole country had a crash of home property values and foreclosures. Well, that may have happened, but now there's a overabundance of vacant homes and vacant lots and vacant commercial property. This is an opportunity for black folks to get their act together and start paying up to stuff and trying to straighten out that imbalance that's going on in the city of Detroit. The thing about it, they're selling homes in the city of Detroit for $100 to $2,500. Obviously, if you get them back for $100, they can be intact. But even the ones from $2,500 actually up to $7,500, they'll be intact. They'll need some cosmetic work. Now, folks need to get their act together, start getting some money together, start banning some property, maintaining them. Because if you do that, within 10 years, you're going to quadruple your money. And from there, you can invest in something further. And somebody, a family's member or a future business of your own, or take the equity from that house once you get it prepared and start your own business that's going to support folks or provide them with the things they want instead of somebody else doing it. Another issue in the city of Detroit, folks, first and second generation folks from the Middle East, have come in and virtually taken over the entire small business community within the boundaries of the city of Detroit.
Okay, so now that's the point you just made there, because like 5 years ago, I was the first person to start talking about the emergency finance managers. I was the first person who was talking about Benton Harbor. I was the first person who was talking about what was going on in Detroit. I was the first person who read from Time Magazine and from other publications about how that Detroit is looking to, they were talking about how they were looking to the Arab population to spot the economic revitalization of the city. So you've got a majority black city, but that essentially is controlled by the Arab minority in most of those neighborhoods where black folk are, they have to go to a non-black person to buy something. In a city where 80% of your population is Arab, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't
Absolutely.
Make any sense.
Let me tell you how I got there. You know, obviously, we all know this is the one town with the motor capital of the country. You can come in Detroit, get a job at one of these plants or suppliers, make a hell of a lot of money with less than a high school education. You could support your wife, your kids. You could support your other woman and support two households on one paycheck. And that will take you for the rest of your life. And on top of that, when you retire, you will have enough money to leave a legacy behind. These guys who came in these plants, let's say just in the 70s retiring, they're retiring with a pension, Social Security, and somewhere between 200 to 500 grand in the bank for money they've collected over that 30 years. So you came in, people in the city didn't think about starting a business. You came in to live a high life. You work hard, and you got enough some money, and you haven't need no education. Well, that concept, that mentality, didn't change. And people expected to get those jobs. They didn't have no idea what entrepreneurial was or starting a business. I mean, there's a few of them. They all want to start soul food places. But anything out of that, man, they didn't have an idea of being your own boss. I mean, they might have sent their kids to school, and some of them went on to higher education, to higher things, but the vast majority of Detroit and things like that. So starting from the 70s on, folks know these folks made some money. They needed stuff to take care of them, and they came in from different parts of the world, different parts of the country, and started the small mom-and-pop business to provide for them. You know,
yeah, but that's the problem, though. Wait a minute. No, because you said that our people knew how to run businesses. Hell, at Motown. My God, we have plenty of black businesses in Detroit. We put them down. That's what happened. We put them down. We didn't care about entrepreneurism. We didn't care about controlling the economy. Everybody wanted to go to work for GM. Everybody wanted to go to work at the plant. Everybody wanted to take over the system. They wanted to be a cog in the system and make a place in the system for themselves. The foreigners, they don't care about the plant. They're not looking to carve out a niche in the system. They are looking for something that they own and control so they cannot be frozen out of the system. In other words, they want to make their own system so you can't freeze them out. Black folk right now are being frozen out because we did everything for the last 80, 90 years in Detroit except create a system for ourselves. And now we are dependent on someone else who has clearly shown that that door is locked and they are never going to reopen it, not for us, they're not. And there we sit. And we've continued to sit to this day. And that's the situation we're in right now. So black folk could change it, brother, but they're not determined to. And we can't say it's not because we don't have enough money. We got plenty of money. You let me bring out the LeBrons and the New Jordans, you'll have a line in Detroit just like you have in any other black city in America. We have the money. We just don't have the will. And now what's happening is social Darwinism. They are just going to remove them from the landscape altogether. And those $100 houses you were talking about, as you know, those are being bought, those whole tracts of land, whole streets and whole blocks are being bought up by investors from around the world. So you're in a situation right now where I'm not concerned about the people who are buying the land. I'm concerned about what they're going to do with it. Because even if they take it and turn it into rental housing, that would be better than what I fear is about to happen. What I'm afraid is about to occur is that these people who bought all this land, that these are extremely wealthy individuals, and that their plan is to sit on this land for the next 5, 10, 15 years, and that they bought the land for what, $1,000, $2,000, and that in 10, 15 years, they'll be able to sell it for $2 million. That's a hell of a return on your investment. And whatever they sell it for is probably going to be industrial or commercial. In other words, you can't live there. that means that the black population who doesn't own any housing of own isn't going to have a place to go because they don't own any housing. And the non-black people who came in and bought all the houses sold it as commercial property, which means the houses are all going to be torn down, which means they've just guaranteed you won't be there.
You're absolutely right. Let me drop another dime to you. The state and federal government came up with some money to tear down. Well, I don't know if you know, Detroit once had a population of 1,800,000. Now it's somewhere hovering somewhere between maybe 650,000 to 700,000. So obviously there's a whole lot of vacant property. The city has found all the vacant property that's not rehabable, and they got money from the state, the federal government, to tear down those properties. That's 86,000 vacant homes and buildings. They said they had the money there. They're going to have it all torn down within 5 years. I'm telling folks now, once all those vacant houses are gone, things are going to change like overnight because it's going to lock folks down in certain neighborhoods. And then once you lock down, the value of that property is going to go up. Then once the property go up, the rent's going to go up. Then once the rent go up, you're going to go out because you can't afford to live there. If you ain't got the right type of job to maintain, to live in a place where they can afford to raise the rent because there's not too many places you can move to, the population is going to start decreasing.
Here's what you're going to look for, okay? Critical tipping point. When the white, and I'm just going to predict this right now at the top of my head, based on what I've seen everywhere else around the world and around the country, when the white population of Detroit, I want to say that when you start, and I'm talking about the inner city, the metropolitan area, and I'm talking about right in the heart of it, when that population point starts tipping closer to that 20% range, all hell's going to break loose. It's not even going to take a lot. Now, we can count everybody else in that if you want to, I guess. I don't know. But when you start seeing white population closing in on that 20%, you are going to have somebody walk into that place and say, I want to invest $1 billion. And if you don't believe they can do it, go ask Steve Wynn out there in Las Vegas. I want to invest $1 billion in an industrial park or a refinery or something. And when they say that, Katie, bar the damn door. For black folk in Detroit at that moment, when that person makes that announcement, it's over. The game is officially over at that point. Might as well just get up and start packing up and walking out right then. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Yeah, Dr. Claude Anderson had the right idea. Invest, find out what people who look like you want. Start a business within that marketplace and grow from there. And he laid out a whole program for it. Folks need to go out and buy his book. I ain't getting no money in it, so I'm have no business connection with him. But I'm just saying, I saw his videos, watch his videos, buy his book, and advance yourself and your people.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother. We appreciate having you. There was a person in the chat room who, RB Radio Network, he's absolutely correct. Problem with selling rims. I don't have a problem with selling shoes. I don't have a problem with selling belts. I don't have a problem with selling weaves. I don't have a problem with selling any of that. The only thing I got a problem with is who's controlling it, who's benefiting from it. Because there's plenty of money being made. I don't have a problem with the money being made, however the money is made. I'm not going to quibble with that. I don't care. My point is, the problem we have today is not that we got Air Jordans and rims. The problem we got today is you bought the Air Jordans from Nike and you bought your weaves from the Koreans over there. That's the problem. And your people get nothing. That's the problem that I have with it. if we're going to have all that stuff, we should be controlling the whole market. How is it that we can be 90% of the consumers and 1% of the suppliers? That makes no sense. If we're 90% of the consumers, we ought to be 95%. Hell, we ought to be 100% of the suppliers. If we are 90% of the people who buy it, to be running that thing up one side and down the other. Why not? We should be. I don't have a problem with it, really, people. It's going to rub a lot of folks the wrong way. But it is what it is, what it is. The market, whatever the market is for, does not matter to me. I said that when Momo was on here the other day. I said, look here, I don't care whether the girls are wearing weaves or not. I'm just saying we ought to own all of it. If it's going to be Virgin Remy, I don't have a problem with Virgin Remy. What I am saying is when they scalp that chick over there in India, once that big-ass bush of hair leaves that man's hand, that should be the last time of hair touches a non-black hand. Because if the end consumer is going to definitely, absolutely be a black woman, from the moment he scalps her, that should be in our hands from that moment on until it gets to whatever female is going to sew this on her head. And that's real talk. So, no, I am amoral where that's concerned. That might upset a lot of people. I am amoral about that. I really am. I don't worry about that at all. I'm totally amoral about it. We got a lot of phone calls on the line right now from the 312-418-67. Anyway, we got a lot of calls on the line right now, so I want everybody to stay on the line. But I think I recognize one number here, and I want to try to get to them before we get too far along. Is who I think it is from the 951.
Good evening. This is Mona Lachey.
Mona, we were just talking about you.
Yeah, I heard my name. How are you?
Black first, sister. Very glad to hear from you. What's on your mind?
You know, I didn't push one. I was just sitting here listening. I just got home from work.
Well, you should talk to us anyway, which is always a good sign to have here. But definitely, like I say, I'm going to be drafting you here shortly, so be on the lookout for that, because we'll have her talk to us about wefts and weaves, even though she doesn't like dealing with those. We'll have her talk to us about those anyway, because... I just want to. Caller from the 480, you're on live with the Black Panel. Caller from the 480, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 480, it sounded like he was trying to say something, or perhaps he has been abducted. I certainly hope that's not the case. Some people get there on their phones and whatnot, and I have to remind people that this is the most dangerous radio program in the world. Not for me. Not for me, mind you. Not because something might happen to me, but because you might not make it to the end of the broadcast. Might not make it. Not a threat, just a warning. Some people wouldn't like it if you did. Just a warning. Now, I have to be careful here. Let me see who's been waiting for a while. Caller from the 267, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 267, we can hear you. You might as well go ahead and say something. Okay, if you're on the line and you do not want to be in the host queue, I don't even know why I say this, because it rarely ever helps, even though those wonderful people over there at Blog Talk have assured me that this is not supposed to be a problem. Apparently, it may still be. Please press 1, and theoretically speaking, it is supposed to remove you from the caller queue, theoretically speaking. Caller from the 312, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, was this with me?
Yes, that's you. When you heard that mute, that was you.
Oh, okay. What's good, man?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
L.E.L. Royster, calling from Chicago.
That name sounds familiar. I think I saw you earlier today online. What's on your mind, black man?
Yeah, man, just post, just a comment. And I, you know, watched your videos for a while and everything, and just started paying attention to a lot of the things you were saying on your broadcast, because I know that your broadcast was different than the show. So, like the guy was talking about in what's happening in Detroit, that stuff has already happened in Chicago, and it's just ratcheting up as we speak. What he was talking about was the gentrification of Detroit with all of the houses and everything that's being bought up. Well, that stuff happened in Chicago, and if you're, I know you're probably aware of the projects and everything being torn down, with a lot of the black folks that lived in there was being sent out all over to spread out throughout the city, and then being shifted out to the suburbs. They were getting a lot of Section 8 homes and everything. So, you know, crime went up around these different areas. But the thing that they did was they tore all these buildings down. Now they're rebuilding on them. And they're rebuilding on them into the level that people that lived in this neighborhood for 30, 40, 50 years or whatnot cannot even afford what's being built there. There's some low and middle income places there, but that's all in quotation marks because it's still really not.
You know, that's an interesting thing that you just said there, because there was an article that I was going to post up that I saw earlier today that said, you know, the new wealthy poor, that these are people, according to their income, they technically shouldn't be considered poor, but they are. And that was an excellent point you just made. The 21st century is seeing us have to redefine what it means to be poor, because the old idea of food stamps and welfare, that's not really poor. What is poor? Well, poor is when you cannot afford to pay for what you have.
Exactly.
The point you're trying to make, though, is that, because everybody tells themselves, of course I can afford to pay for what I have because I can control what I pay for. And what you're saying is there's a lot of things you can control, but you can't control if the housing values in your area double. Now that you can't control. So what are you going to do when you're making $13 an hour or $20 an hour? And you were paying $1,000 a month in rent, and then the values double to $2,000 a month. Now your paycheck isn't going to double. But the value,
your paycheck never accounts for that.
Yeah, the values in the area doubled, but your paycheck is not. What are you going to do? You still make $15, $20 an hour, but it's no longer enough for where you live. I mean, I've been through like New York and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and whatnot, and I'm there saying, you know, I'm looking at parts where I'm from in Louisiana, $20 an hour take care of pretty much anything anywhere. And then you move to a place like Chicago, a place like Detroit, a place like New York, a place like Buffalo, a place like Boston. And you realize that, man, I didn't know that housing values could double within 24 months. I didn't know that. Because I'm from a place where that does not happen. Housing values don't double in Louisiana. I mean, the only exception was after Hurricane Katrina, and that's only because you wiped out the city of New Orleans. But as a
regular
course,
to take everything over.
It is nothing for that to happen as a regular course of business in one of those huge metropolitan areas. And I've lived in a few, but it's nothing for that to happen in a place like that. And what you're saying is that a lot of people are just, unprepared at, correct?
Exactly. And we're not thinking about that because we're looking in the short term. We're not thinking 5, 10, 15 years down the line. See, where I grew up, was near the University of Chicago. And there was right now, and there's a ton of vacant lots in that area. You can see from the park like three, four blocks down, when before in the late 80s, early 90s, you couldn't see that far because there were buildings standing there. Now it's just acres of vacant lots. Those were mostly bought up by the University of Chicago, and they just been sitting on them for like 15 years or so. Now they're starting to build on them. And they're expanding everything where they own for their campus into the neighborhoods where they used to keep it into an isolated area where Obama lives now. So and coincidentally, used to live down the street from his state senatorial office. But yeah, all in that area was always the plush and posh neighborhoods and whatnot, because that's where all the white folks live in that area. Now they're starting to spread out into the neighborhood, and so somebody's got to go, and it ain't gonna be them. It's gonna, because they the ones that's gonna be owning everything. We don't own any of it. We just rent. We don't own none of the businesses in the neighborhood, and we don't own any of the buildings. We don't own pretty much anything. So they can do whatever the heck they want to do, because, you know, there's nobody really there to fight them. And, you know, in that area, the aldermen were corrupt. I mean, it's just crazy. So, you know, the thing that black folks got to do is understand where we are right now, and then work to try to fix those things. Learn about ownership. Learn about gentrification, and understand the impact of what that's going to have. Because right now in Inglewood, one of the most notorious neighborhoods in Chicago, they're building a Whole Foods. They're not building a Whole Foods for the people that live there now, and they're about to start offering vacant lots for $1. But there's a whole lot of caveats that go along with it. So,
okay, now let me slow you down for a moment, because you live there. You said they're building a Whole Foods in Inglewood.
Yeah.
Now, Inglewood is notorious nationwide, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
I'm about to say, you already know. That's Boot Hill. But, I mean, they're building a Whole Foods, really.
Yeah.
I mean, is this like a strip mall where they're building a bunch of other things, too? Or this is just a Whole Foods just sitting by itself?
It's going to be a Whole Foods sitting by itself. It's going to open in 2016. So what they're doing now is they're offering vacant lots, and there's a ton of them in there for like $1. But like I said, the people can't afford the property taxes that are going to come along with it. You have to build something on it. They don't have the money to do those things. And there's nobody investing the money for them to do that, because you have to live in the area. You have to live in the area first or some crap like that. But there's still a median income that you're going to have to meet in order to be able to hold on to this land, to be able to put a fence around it. You have to be able to do a whole bunch of different things. And, you know, a lot of those people that's there are going to be priced out of that. So while it looks good that you can buy it for $1, there's still a lot of loopholes. There's a lot of loopholes that's going along with that. And now those loopholes, like you said before, the devil is in the details. Those things are going to keep those people from being able to buy those particular lots, because they won't be able to build anything on them. So they're going to go to somebody else who will be able to build on them.
I don't live there.
And those are not going to be for us.
I don't live there, so I don't know. I don't live in Inglewood, so I couldn't. Maybe you can tell us.
Mm-hmm.
How far is Whole Foods' target demographic from that store? Since obviously it's not Inglewood, how far is their target demographic?
Oh, their target demographic is like on the other side of the city, and which is say 9-10 miles, which in Chicago is a big distance. In the suburbs,
then
why do you think people are going to be coming back?
Why do you think they built
in
that?
Like I said before, they didn't build it for the people that's there now. They're building it for the people that's going to be there 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is that they have to survive for the 10 or 15 years.
Oh, yeah, they got a plan for that. They're going to offer some food at a lower price for the people that's there now. But like I said, it's built for the long haul. It's not built for the short term.
Okay, let me ask a few questions here, because I don't think that's quite right either. Let me find out.
Okay.
Where they built this Whole Foods?
How far from the freeway is it? It's about 5 minutes.
Okay, so it's actually very close to
straight
a freeway.
Straight shot.
Yeah, so that's the
it's
first
straight
thing.
Straight shot. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the land around the Whole Foods, that's what I really need to find out about. So now we know how they expect current and future traffic to get in and out. This also tells me what their future plans are, so that's going to direct my line of questions. The land around Whole Foods, what's on the left and right side of that whole? I mean, has it already been built, or are they just planning on building?
No, it's not built yet. It's
okay.
It used to be a jewel that was there, but okay, there in that area there was a big strip mall that was there, but they've since torn some of that down because they rebuilt the community college that was there. They moved it from one spot to another. To that area. Like I said, they've been rebuilding that area for about 5, 6, 7 years now. But before it was starting to get run down. That was the big shopping commerce area for Inglewood at that, you know, for that part of Inglewood at the time. But we didn't own none of the stores there any either, so it was all Erebone. But now they've changed it, and this is just another piece of the puzzle fitting in. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. How much land would you say there is right there in the area that they're trying to build on? How much land that they can build on before you get to houses? That's the important thing. Before you get to residences,
Houses are within, like, say, 200 feet in any direction.
That doesn't sound
in any direction. The layout of it, huh?
That sounds really, really peculiar.
Yeah, the layout of the land around there is really weird because it's a central hub, and everything surrounds that particular part of it. You know, if you get what I'm saying, there's a big intersection, and then north, south, east, and west. You see what I'm saying? I may be off on the measurement.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, so
here's the thing. Here's what I'm saying is that Capricorn basically, the chat room basically beat me to it. Is that typically when you do something like this, you have an anchor tenant. Now, like, for example, when they build Walmart, usually, you know, you're going to find those things in the middle of something larger, although that those monsters are so big today that they don't basically are a shopping strip unto themselves. But if you have something like a Kroger's, I don't know if you got those up in Chicago or not, but, you know, Whole Foods is a little bit different. But if you have something like a Kmart or something like that, they're usually what they call an anchor tenant. And they use that one as the main store, and then they put a bunch of other ones around it, you know, shoe places and hair salons and Radio Shack and whatever. And what I'm saying is that, you know, usually in a situation like that, you know, you're going to need about 30, 40 acres of land.
Right.
When you take into account the structure itself, parking, and the additions we'll be making, usually you're looking at like 30, 40 acres of land. If it's kind of sparse, you might, you know, do 15, 20 acres. If it's going to be a big chunk, we might need, you know, 30, 40 acres, depending on size of it and whatnot. So
now, you got to understand something about this area. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm saying is that with an eye towards the future, if you're not talking at least, you know, 10 acres of land, well, that's why I asked you, have they already built it? Because I'm like, rumors go together.
No, they're breaking ground. Like they broke ground on it. They're going to be, like I said, it's scheduled to open in 2016. So this is already in place. This has already been announced. It's happening. So, but what I'm saying is this area is a residential area with this big area that was there. There was no big stores there, you know, just local, like Aldi and Jewel and Walgreens, things like that. But it was all local, small, foreign-owned stores in the strip mall area down Halsted. Now, this store is going to be like the first major food store in the area, like, period, beyond the Jewel. So, but that's what I'm saying. You only find, in Chicago, you only find Whole Foods in white areas. You just break it down seriously, you know, for real what it is. That's the only place you'll ever find a Whole Foods. This is the first one that I've ever heard of that they would build in a black neighborhood. So,
well, that's across America. I mean, Whole Foods is not a cheap place. So across America, that's a suburbs or major shopping center thing. My thing is when you take a look at the future towards growth, it's going to be kind of hard if you're going to go plug this thing up right smack dab in the middle of a residential area. That's going to be a particularly heavy lift to try to do as far as making that thing possible.
That's what I was telling you about. People are being moved out, and then also people are being offered cheap vacant lots to build on, to build new stuff, to build new homes, new houses, and everything. Like I said, it's not going to be for the people that's there now because those people are going to be priced out, like we were just saying earlier in the conversation. So this is, you know, this is, I see this as a chess piece, pieces moving on the chessboard, you know, while they're playing, you know, grandmaster level Harry Potter wizard's chess, we're still playing Chinese checkers. So, you know, that's a game nobody understands. So we got to figure that part out. We got to understand. We got to get on the same playing field, and that's just not happening. The only way we can do that is business.
I mean, that's why I was saying that it can be kind of hard to get a Whole Foods there like that. If they're going to do it, that's fine. I don't know how much fighting they want to do with residential, you know, with residents to try to get more land. Because if the thing is successful, that would be different. I think it sounds a little funny. I'd like to see the area a little bit more so I can get more of an idea, because I don't know what's across the street from it or whatever. It sounds a little it sounds a little odd unless things are about to get really, really critical out there, because what I'm concerned about is you know, not too far from Illinois was the Kelo Vermont scene. You who are not aware of Kelo, about 10 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled, it was Kelo, it was a case in Kelo, Vermont. This real estate developer wanted to build a bunch of condos and stuff. And he said to the city of Kelo that, hey, we can do this if you move all these little old ladies and their houses out of here.
Right.
And the little old ladies and their houses, they fought it and they fought it and they fought it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled that eminent domain was absolute. And that even though these condominiums, now the argument that the city of Kelo used was that building these condominiums would raise property values, which in the best interest of the city, that was public good of the city. Now, up until then, eminent domain was understood to strictly go towards public property from one citizen and give it to another citizen. But what I'm worried about is that Kelo said you can do it, and unless you have a law in Illinois, because we all know how squeaky clean the Illinois legislature is, so unless you all have a law in Illinois that forbids that kind of thing, that kind of chicanery, things are about to get real tough, let me tell you. If you, because we have one here in Louisiana. We got a law like that to prohibit that in Louisiana. They passed it right after Kelo. I'm worried that if you don't have that in Illinois, if you don't have that in Illinois, that means you're not covered in Chicago. And if you're not covered in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel will drive the damn bulldozer over the house.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, these things are happening. And they've been happening. They've been happening for about a good 10, 15 years. At least, I mean, you know what, 10, 15 years ain't even enough, because that just basically covers like 99 from now. We're talking about going like all the way back to the early 90s. So we're talking about, wait, what, 20-something odd years has been going on? These things have just been happening. So, yeah, but I had called because I got completely off the point of what I wanted to say when I called in, if you don't mind me saying it.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, we need to understand contracts like you were saying before. We need to understand the importance of locking our stuff down when we go into business. You know, the thing is, a lot of us don't understand trademarking. We don't understand copyright. We don't understand those type of things. I took a few music business classes, and those were very important into what, you know, into doing that, because they taught us all of those things and how to go about doing that. So I like to share that. I like to share some of that information every chance I get with people, so they understand that these things are important. So when you go into starting your own business, you got to understand, you got to think about branding, marketability, and things of that nature. So when you trademark your logo, your image, that gives you the right to put that image on anything. It's all about monetizing what you do. It's not just about whatever it is you sell. Like you said, we can sell whatever it is, but also sell your brand. Put that out there. Make sure that you have it all trademarked. It's not enough to just copyright. You got to have your intellectual property too, so that you can have full, complete control over what it is you do. And you can do that by going to the Postmark Trademark Office, which is USPTO.gov. You can go and trade, you know, copyright stuff at the Library of Congress, LOC.gov, and do those things. Pay that money. Don't do the poor man's copyright. Don't do the poor man's nothing. Pay the money, because that's the one thing we always try to get out of, is paying the money. pay the money. It's important because this is, you're talking the potential millions of dollars, and that's how you have to think. In that, okay, this is my baby. I'm going to protect it, and I'm going to make sure that if anybody makes any money off of it, it's going to be me.
Well, definitely, I think those are great points for you to make there. How old are you?
I'm 38.
Okay, 38. You sound young than that.
People always say that.
No, well, that's a good problem to have, let me tell you. At 38, living in Chicago, what do you see as your prospects? Because you actually were not off point before. Because here's the problem, my friend. You can have copyrights and trademarks in the world. That doesn't matter if you don't have a place to live. What do you see as your prospects for being able to stay in Chicago? You're 38 right now. It's not like you got a bunch of time to be making a decision about whether that place is viable for you. What do you see as your prospects for the future?
See, the thing is, I'm not, you know, I'm considering getting out of Chicago because Chicago is getting worse and worse and worse for black folks. It's not getting any better. And so Chicago might be, you know, in my distant future, say 5 years from now. I'm not even sure. But it's no good. You know, ain't nothing here for real. So yeah, I couldn't even tell somebody what to do as far as, you know, what future prospects is and what, you know, what they think might be able to happen. Nah, ain't nothing here in Chicago for nobody, especially not for black folks. It's you know, we got to get the heck up out of here and start over somewhere else. At least that's how I'm thinking.
Where did you have in mind?
I don't even know at this moment. I've been up and down the East Coast a little bit, but all I know is Chicago is the most covertly overt racist city in the country. I mean, they act like everybody is all inclusive, but no, this place is full of racism. So it's crazy. But I mean, that's all I want to say, though, man. You know.
Well, as a black man in that place, like I say, I'm not really sure where you're going, but black folk have had decades now to get their act together in Chicago and just sat on their hands, man. Black people have
you
sat
ain't lied.
All over the South Side. Should have had the South
you ain't
Side.
Lied.
That South Side should have been sewn up 35 years ago. Should have been sewn up. That thing ought to be a black Chinatown today. It ought to be. And look at it. It's a damn slum. Tell me if I'm lying about that. You know, it's, like I said, you don't have to go into that. We all know. It's not like we don't know. Same thing with Inglewood.
For the most part, you're right. For the most part of it, you're right. There's pockets of really good neighborhoods and a lot of people owning their homes, but all those are really owned by a lot of older folks. As far as younger folks, there's not a whole lot of that. But I mean, it's just a lot of things going on here, and we're too busy pointing the fingers at each other that we're not seeing the chess pieces being moved around us. That's why I was telling people before, we could have a lot of things if we just diverted the money that we use to support other neighborhoods, and we could be able to do a lot of the things that we need to do as far as building and rebuilding our neighborhoods and building the things that we need here. But we divert our funds to supporting other people's neighborhoods that we don't understand.
Well, one of the people in the chat room did make a good point that, you know, racism is everywhere. And
what you
were saying about that is that, I mean, I get your point. Don't get me wrong. I do get your point.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it holistically, especially in a city like that, or in any city, to be totally honest with you right there, what you really want to do is get it together. There's only going to be a few people who actually understand what's going on. It's not that everybody can't see that the pieces are being moved. It's not that. It's that how many people are doing something with the pieces being moved, and how many people are sitting there watching it and saying, oh, well.
Right.
You know, that's the problem, that we as black people have a habit of seeing the pieces being moved, and we just sit there like a deer in the headlights. Oh, well, the pieces are being moved.
I think the problem is we don't realize the power that we do have. Long and short of it.
I brother, at this point in my life, I don't think it's that we don't realize the power that we have. I think it's that we have become comfortable being the poorest people in America. We have
I can agree with you on that,
that
one.
We have just accepted that poverty is, that this is our fate, our children, that this is just our fate. This
sort of like a ghetto is destiny kind of thing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like Buddhism or Brahmanism, whatever, that this is a caste system, and it's just our place to be in the caste system.
Right. Yeah, sort of like what that's like what Michelle Alexander talks about, a whole new racial caste being built and being established, and we're at the bottom rung of it.
I have with it. The 21st century will be like nothing else before it.
Because you ain't lied about that one.
This century is not about, it's not going to be a situation where you can make a place to be impoverished. It's not going to be that kind of place, man. That's not going to happen. You are not going to be able to carve out a niche for yourself as the poorest people in the society. Because as wealth becomes more consolidated in this century, they're not looking for, they don't need people. They don't need all these excess people running around here. What do you think the Google Robotics project is about? They bought Boston Dynamics. Why? It's only going
to
be a matter of time before you have robots.
Human process.
It'll only be a matter of time before you have once you have robot servants. I mean, you're not, your place of being assured and existence and survival at the bottom of the food chain is very, very quickly evaporating. And people don't understand that. So that's what I'm saying, that making ourselves comfortable being poor means that you're making yourself comfortable for extinction.
Exactly. And you know what? Speaking of the robot thing, Amazon is doing that right now. With their warehouses and everything, they have robots that actually go out and get your stuff out of their in the warehouse and everything. It's all programmed. It's all automated and whatnot. Pretty then they're talking about which is like a little far off into the future, but it's about robotic delivery systems where if you order something off Amazon,
you're talking about the drones.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
We don't know if the drones are really viable or not, but here's the real problem.
Yeah.
The fact that they're even talking about this. That's the thing that should be really scary. Did you realize that they're even discussing this? And the fact that they're even, somebody that large and that mammoth is discussing this, it's like when Walmart started with the self-checkout. Those of you who don't know, Walmart's original plan was to remove all the cashiers and to replace all the cashiers with those self-service checkouts. That was the original plan. The problem, they tried to phase it in. The problem that the customers didn't like it. They wanted to have a person. So they still got self-checkout ones, not as many of them. But understand something.
Yeah, because you go in there and see about 100 aisles and maybe four of them open.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, I'm going to go ahead and educate you all about this tonight. The reason why whenever you go into a Walmart, I'll just ask you, do you know why it is you go into a Walmart and you got 20 checkout lanes and only four people checking out? Do you know why that is?
Automation.
Okay, most people don't know why they have 20 checkout lanes but only four cashiers. All right. When they started doing ramping up into the Supercenter system, when they first put together the business plan for how it would work, there were two things that they decided on. Number one, we want a bunch of lanes. Why? Because efficiency dictated that if we had 20 lanes, we would never have to worry about a situation where we did not have enough cashiers or enough checkout lanes during holiday season. Or we didn't have to worry about taking a register down and not having enough registers for all of our customers. So it was a contingency plan, was what it was.
Right.
It's worked out more or less. All right. The second thing, though, and this is the more important part, The reason why you only have a few checkout registers is because in corporate worlds, they have people who are, they call them, in some cases, they call them bean counters. But they're not really accountants the way that you're accustomed to this phrase being used. They are actually what you would consider to be corporate actuaries. Now, for those of you who don't know what an actuary is, in the insurance business, an actuary is a person who calculates the odds of a certain type of accident happening to a certain type of person. That's why if you are 20 years old, insurance costs XYZ, and if you're 30 years old, insurance costs ABC. That's what actuaries do. Their job is to calculate the probability of something happening. Think of these people more that way. Well, here's what the actuaries do. Walmart's executives decided, and you all can go look this up yourselves, it's called funneling, is the term that they used. Now, once I use that term, it starts making sense to you. Mm-hmm. That's why they've got 50 people here, but only four lanes open. They did a study at all of their Walmarts. Originally, they used to have half the lanes open, but they did a study. They wanted to find out. What they realized was that eventually what will happen is the checkout people will run through all the customers they've got. So what they wanted to know was, well, how many cashiers do we actually need? Well, how do you calculate that? They came up with a rather sinister and diabolical formula. What they did was they did experiments at some of their stores. They didn't tell you, but they did this 20 years ago. And what they did was they opened one register during the peak time of day. Just one. The goal right. was to find out how long would a customer stand there with their buggy before they just left it and walked away. What the actuaries determined was that the magic number was 35 minutes. Now, think about your last trip to Walmart during peak time. And think about how long you stood there. They eventually whittled the formula down to 20 minutes. If you think of the last time you went to Walmart during peak time, think about how long you stood there. And if you ever stood there and then they say, we need Khadijah to come up here to lane 7. I need all my checkers up front. Think about how long you stood there before you heard them say
before that happened. Right.
So what I'm saying is that if you think I'm just making it up, think it over for a few minutes, and you'll start to realize, well, I'll be damned. And then you go to your local store, like Kroger's or Whole Foods or whatever, and that never happens. Or Publix, and it never happens. And the reason that it never happens is because they're not, most of them are not using the same formula of funneling. Unfortunately, they're starting to. That's the bad news. But if you want to know why it happens when you go to the Walmart like that, that's why. That study was done, and once they had the magic number, they just said, well, now we know exactly what to do with you. The same thing happened when I worked for AT&T and Verizon. They had AT&T and Verizon are the absolute worst about researching customers. When they first were coming out with the iPhones and whatnot, at AT&T, they wanted to find out what customer wanted more because they wanted to come up with a different type of plan. And they just put out surveys where they asked focus group and asked customers, what was more important to you? Your cell phone? If you had a choice between paying your cell phone and paying your rent, which one would you pay? The customers made the ultimate mistake. They answered honestly. What they said was, I'd rather pay for my cell phone because if I needed a place to stay, I would need to have a way to contact people. AT&T and Ed Whitaker and all the rest of them smiled when you said that. Randall Stevenson grinned from ear to ear when you said that.
Right.
Because most people do not understand what you really just said. They thought they
you
were just
said that you would be willing to pay through the nose for it.
What you really just said is that my phone is more important to me than a roof over my head.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, your bill jumped from unlimited service for $50 a month to 2 gigabytes of data for $100 a month. And no new cell phone towers. And no new cell phone towers.
Right.
And all once you think about it that way, it all starts to make sense to you now about why you've been getting done the way you've been getting done. Because, and even if you didn't take the survey, the problem is the Jamuchi next door sold you out is the problem. So you are paying for their bad answers. You're paying for it. Unfortunately, you're still paying the cell phone bill too. So they understand you better than you understand yourself in a lot of ways. And if black people did the same type of research, we'd have all of them in our hands too. Unfortunately, those other people take a meticulous amount of time to set up the deck intricately, and we don't even read the manual, much less the fine print. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Yeah, I was just gonna just like you said, they take meticulous time to stack the deck. Shoot, we're not even playing with the same deck of cards. We're playing with some other one. But I just enjoyed this conversation. It was awesome. I was, really hoping to get in. I hope I didn't, jump ahead of anybody else. But just keep this building thing happening and keep it all going, because this is a great and wonderful thing that you're doing. Thanks for allowing me to have a little time to speak on your show, on your broadcast. I appreciate it. Hopefully looking forward to we can do it again. And Black First, man.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it. That was a good phone call. Brother's 38 years old, sitting in the belly of the beast up there in Chicago. It is crazy. It is insane. It really, really is. And that's what they have happening up there right now. That's really what's going on. People, they have analyzed you up one side and down the other. They know you better than you know yourself. They know you better than you know yourself. Kind of makes you wonder, is that what happened to Aaron Magruder? See, we bring things full circle. Is that what happened to him? A young black man who walked into that room thinking he had everything sewn up, thinking he had the deck stacked on his side, and then found out that, no, it's not. No, it's not at all. It's not stacked at all on your side, man. If you let them write the rules, it is going to be firmly stacked in their favor. That's the way it always is. What do you own? What do you control? And what do you pass down? Oh, yeah, you can probably add a fourth one in. What did you do to make sure about that? What did you do to ensure that? Caller from the 917, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 917, last time, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay. Call from 917 has been abducted. We are very, very sorry to hear that. See if we can grab a couple more callers here. Caller from the 786, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First.
Black First, brother, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Lonnie from Miami.
What's on your mind, black man?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about the mental state of black people today, because I see how a lot of people, I wouldn't want to say attack, because they really can't attack you. They're just talking about you and how they saying that, you're talking about building and doing something for us. Everybody doing something for themselves, and just how people can turn and say you're an agent or somebody's an agent or somebody is for white supremacy when they're talking about building some black people doing something for themselves. That's insane that you can look at somebody and say, that person, where I don't know what he looks like, so I don't like him because of that, and he's for white supremacy. When has white supremacy ever been for black people building something? And this entire state of black people just wanting to stay right where we are, just doing nothing. Like, people can just look around and have this mental capacity of, I don't want to do anything. I just want to sit around and complain. And anybody that says, that tells me to get up and go do something is my enemy. Have something for myself is my enemy. Because my father didn't teach me that. He taught me to go and get my own, go and get something. He taught all his sons to go and get something, build something for yourself, make your own win as well. It's only, you know, it's in your hands if you get up and go do it. And the message that you're saying of building is something that a lot of young men didn't hear growing up because they didn't have fathers. So where's your mental capacity at when somebody is finally telling you that? You know, you're 25, 30, 40 years old, and somebody is finally telling them that, and they're denying it. They'll rather sit still and talk about sex. Like, that we have I look at posts sometimes online, and I hear people talking, and it's just this, you know, just ridiculous on how they don't care. They just want to, anything about sex and everything else. Like, I always say, man, my people get distracted so easily. We can get distracted on the stupidest thing so easily, so readily, that our minds are too weak. And I just look and I think, my father is the strongest person that I know. He's the strongest man that I ever know. And I think he raised three strong sons. And I look at these kids today, and I even look at me and my own age, because I'm 34. And I look at me and my own age and older than me, and I just say, man, it's hard to get to 34 years old and then look around at your own people and say, my people are weak. They don't have mental strength. They don't have strong backbones. They're living off of being strong from decades and centuries ago. They're saying, you know, we're strong. Look at Malcolm X. And then I say, no, we're not strong. We're weak today. We're very weak today. We're not a strong people.
You know, and you made so many excellent points here so far. I'm telling you, I'm going to give you a microphone. You should have your own broadcast, brother. That's what you should have, your own broadcast. Some people have a problem with that. I want as many people out there with their own broadcast as humanly possible. That's why I made a video that you all can see on YouTube that tells you how to set up your own broadcast just like I've got right here. So you should definitely have that. You made a lot of great points, and I just wanted to jump in here so I can comment on a couple before any of them slip my mind right quick. When you said that we are living off the accomplishments of people from decades and centuries before, a person should be ashamed to say, we are a strong people, look at Malcolm X. And I don't mean that the way that some people would think that, or that most people would be taking that. Look what you're saying. I mean, this is what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, you're saying that we are a strong people because of Malcolm X. Why didn't you say that we are a strong people because of you? You're talking about strong because of what Malcolm did. Okay, but what have you done to make us strong? You haven't explained any of that. You're telling me that we're going to live off of Malcolm's accomplishments? Malcolm was supposed to have a baton. And when he was killed, that baton passed to you. That's what happened. And what you're saying, I'm looking at the baton, I'm playing with the baton, but I'm not running with it. This is a great baton that Malcolm brought me. Let me sit down and go watch World Star Hip Hop. Let me sit down and go talk about the pyramids. Let me sit down and talk about Denmark Vesey and Nat Turner and Marcus Messiah Garvey. Let's talk about them. Let's not talk about me. And that's back to the original point you made. Black people will do anything and everything, anything possible to change the conversation away from themselves.
Correct.
They'll do anything anything earthly possible to get it off of themselves. A rather depressing point that you made, sobering I should say, maybe not depressing, but a sobering point that you made, is that if a black man is in his 40s, and this is the first time that somebody brought the gospel of entrepreneurship to him. He made it all the way from age 1 to 40 with absolutely no one telling him that his self-worth is tied to what he owns, controls, and is passing down. He's been a perfect tool of servitude, but that's all he's been. And this is the first time that anybody was able to do that. Brother, what do I do with a grown man at 40 who knows absolutely nothing that we're talking about? I really have to tell you, and it's sad for me to say this, I don't know how much I can do with somebody at 40, and you understand this, because he has adopted so many bad habits at this point. Even if he knows that he needs to do this, I am worried that it's going to be too difficult to teach him, because he's chasing hoes, and he likes his drink on, he watches the clock when he's at work. You know, as an employee, you're supposed to be using your time as an employee to craft your skills and hone your skills at being an employer, while everybody else is preoccupied while everyone else preoccupied with going home, you're supposed to be preoccupied with doing the best job possible, making sure that your customers for the guy you work for right now are the most happy, because when you leave him and you set up your own business, it's going to be your job to make sure the customers remain happy so that you stay in business. And I can't teach somebody how to want to stay in business. I can't teach them that. I can teach them a lot of things. I can't teach you how to want to be the best there is at what you do. I can't teach you that. You have to want that. You have to understand that being the best at what you do is what makes you that unlimited income that you're so concerned about getting. So for a guy who makes it to his 40s, and we've never talked to him before, and nobody said anything, I am willing to speak to him. And I do. I'm willing to do it, and I do. But I'm concerned. I would be very, very concerned that somebody at that age is set in their ways, and that these little intricacies that are so important, that he'll be resisting me, that he'll be trying to figure out a way to cut corners. That's what would concern me. But I think those are excellent points you make. Those are all excellent points.
Yeah, I go back to the idea of what you can do with that person, and it's not much, because you see so many black people are our own worst enemies, and so many don't want to actually do anything, that it's not just that they'll rather go to a white person or go to an Indian person or go to a Latino or somebody else, just to go to them, that they'll make excuses because they don't want the person who's next to them, the black person next to them, who's about doing something and building his own business and constructing something. They don't want that person to succeed, because the person next to you starts to succeed, then it's that light that shines on him. Some of it gets on you, and you're not doing anything. Because I'm one of three brothers. I'm the middle brother. And between all three of us, we've all at one point in time owned our own business. My younger brother just started up a business. So how can and the people that I'm on my second phase of restarting my business, because I did just like you have said, you wanted to go with the black people because they were your people. And I did go to the black people because I said, I'm going to put a package together to make so that people can start their own business and go from right now to death to leaving their kids a life insurance policy. And people didn't want it. I mean, I did everything to do it, and people will not go for it. People won't go and buy, you know, hair supplies from a black person because that's a black person that now I'm helping them get somewhere. So as I'm helping them get somewhere, I'm not going anywhere. So I'm not going to let them become, you know, successful and I stay here. And that's our biggest problem. So that 40-year-old man he has no plans on ever getting anywhere, no ideas about what ever getting anywhere. So he'd rather sabotage the next black person next to him that's trying to get somewhere rather than to help that person get somewhere. Well, that's a black person that if you're a hard worker, you helped him get somewhere. Now he has a job for you. Now you're not working for a non-black person. You're working for a black person, and we can't do that. I look back at the idea of the old movie RoboCop, where they build new Detroit, old Detroit was just all messed up. So they decided it's too messed up to fix, so they built new Detroit next to it. And it's sort of like we just have to take the black community and take out all the good black people that actually are worth the crap and build a new black community next to it and put a fence up. Because they're just going to keep us they're going to keep us down because there's a minority and there's a vast minority of black people that are actually going to do something. And because we're spread so far, because this land is 3,000 by 3,000 miles. So everybody that you connect to that's proficient in that and building is so far away. So your help is so far away. I'm the only person I've heard call your show from South Florida. So that means
I get very, very few calls from Florida. I get very, very few. I'm huge in Arizona. I'm huge in Philadelphia. I get very, very few calls from Florida. I said it 5 years ago when I first started. Florida's done for black people. It's done. It's not kind of on its way out. It's done.
Yeah, it is. It's nothing here because people don't want to do anything but achieve for themselves something, a quote-unquote secure job for some non-black person and move to a less than minority black area. And that's it. They don't want to do anything more than that. And then compound it with they don't want to help anybody else to achieve something. And this is the thought processes that other groups of people, other races of people don't have. When you come to this country and you're an Arab, Arabs help other Arabs. When you're in this country and you have an idea and you're black people do not help other black people. So when you listen to your broadcast and you hear people who are on the same wavelength, you're not hearing people who are close to you to follow group economics. You're hearing people who are far away. Just like the last caller that you had, Chicago. So if I'm sitting here and I'm like, my group economics partner is in Chicago. What can he
but
do for me?
But you know what? Let's talk about that. Brother, when I did my documentary last year, my cinematographer was from Minnesota. And our assistant was from California. And the other assistant was from, where the hell were they from? They're from someplace, from people. Louisiana, California, Minnesota, and parts unknown. But my point is, brother, it's like the movie Jurassic Park. Life finds a way. Being a business owner simply means that your job is to solve problems. This is not an insurmountable obstacle. If the person that you need to hook up with is on the other side of the country, brother, you find a way to make that work. If they are dead serious, like you are dead serious, it's like love, my friend. It's like marriage. If that's your wife, you find a way to get to her. You don't find excuses. You find a way. If you can't find a way, you make a way. if that's the only person you can find and you know that they are as serious as you are, what in the hell are you waiting for? Didn't say be stupid. Didn't say be premature. But I am saying if you found the one, I know this sounds just like we're sitting down talking about marriage, but if you found the one, don't let anything stand in your way.
These are obstacles that
must be overcome, because understand something, your survival could be at stake. The two of you working together have a much better chance of survival than the one of you working by themselves. Find a way. And we as black people today, we better make a way. I'm just telling everybody, look, I don't have all the answers. I can just tell you what I've done. I will give you as much assistance as I can. I will give you as much insight and advice as I can. But at the end of the day, understand something. There were several times during the filming of this documentary that I didn't know how I was going to do certain things. I didn't know how I was going to get to certain places in a certain amount of time. You know, I didn't know everything. Like I said, one of the people we were going to talk to called us in the middle of an interview and told us, you can only speak to me on this day during these hours. Wound up doing 14 hours of driving. But guess what? He's in my documentary. Brother, we're Africans. We find a way. And when we can't find it, we make it. That is what we do. Look at the pyramids. Look at metalworking. Look at fire. Look at math. Art. Language. We didn't have a way. We made one. Now, if we build the pyramids and still aren't sure and have no idea exactly how we did that thousands of years ago, and you're telling me that you can't connect with another person 1,000 miles away and you have the internet?
The pyramids, look at all mummification. They still don't know how they did it.
Okay, but you're telling us with the internet, you don't know how to collaborate with another person 1,000 miles away.
Oh, no, I do. I know how to do it. I'm talking about us as a people that we're so far away. And so for some people, for me, I'll reach out for them from distances to meet and gather people. I tell people all the time, I found people of intelligence and who want more, black people who want more, because I got up and I looked. I went and looked, and I always tell people, you have to look. They're there. I know they're there because I found them, because I found you. I found your broadcast because I looked, because I got tired of me being the only one trying to motivate black people around me. And I said, I can't be. There's no idea that has ever been created where one person had that idea. McDonald's and fast food was not, they weren't the first ones to do it. Somebody came up with that idea, and it just happens to be one person put it into action. So somebody has to be out there. And I found you out there, and I found other people out there. So I tell people, look, you have to look, because they're there. I would go to extremes to go and find people who are there. So I'll go. I want us to do this, because we don't have anybody else. There's that large, you know, like I told you last week, there's that 85% of black people who they will not, they're not on board at all. And the rest of us that want to do something, we have to do it, because they only see black people only have the goal of seeing success. You have to do it and then come back and tell them and say and point to something. You can't just say this is how to do it. You have to do it. Now for those 15%, once they hear the idea and it's all rolling around in their heads, they can see it in their heads. They can imagine it. They can go to sleep and dream it. They can wake up and they can see it done, and they can start piecing together and making a plan. You know, today's March 22nd. By April 22nd, I should be doing A. By May 22nd, I should be doing B. They could do that. the rest of our people, they can't see that. They have to see the ending phase, and then you come back and show them that. And it's sad that we become a people like that, because when they brought the slaves over here, they saw that they were so intelligent that they only had to show them what to do, and they caught on and they went with it. They caught on and they did it. And that's why they didn't let them learn how to
get a bunch of dummies. I mean, they didn't get a bunch of dummies. They were from the bush, but it's not like they were from a country that didn't have fancy clothing as the Europeans had, but they didn't get a bunch of people who didn't know what they were doing. They understood how to do these things already. And with us today, it's not that we don't have the ability. We just lack the will in too many regards. We just lack the will. I'm going to go ahead and get some more phone calls in here, brother, but I thank you very much for calling us. Please join us again. Very good phone call. We appreciate it. Go ahead and see if I can try to do a little housekeeping here before I get too far along. Let's go ahead and wrap that up. All right. The telephone number is 646-787-1933. This is the BlackChannel.net Radio. I am your host, your humble servant, the Black Authority. Telephone lines are slammed and jammed. But that is as it should. People are eager to speak in the home of intelligent black thought, and we are eager to speak with you. Caller from the 23, you're on Live Black Channel. All right, I thought they were eager to speak with us. Probably not. Caller from the 623, you're on Live with the Black Channel. So you're going to cough in the phone, but you're not going to say anything. Okay, caller from 623-850-8275 is having a embolism. Not really sure what happened to them, but if somebody knows somebody at that number, you need to check with them. It sounds like they're choking on Cornish beef or something. Yes, I know it's a play on words. All right. Before somebody jumps up and says something. What did you mean? Caller from the 425, you're on Live with Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're on Live.
Sarah Black.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Tammy, and I'm from Washington.
Well, I know you. You're from Relationship Talk.
Yes, I am. I am. I am. How are you?
And that is why they call me the authority. No, I do not forget.
Okay, well,
I wish I did right now, but no. I don't forget. I just remember and wait.
Yeah, okay.
That's something you wanted to ask me about.
Yeah, I wanted to ask why put my information on your video? You know, I understand, you know, you're doing your video and all that and you're doing your exposure. That's cool. I have no issues, no questioning about that, but just you're going to put my information on there. Why not just black out my face, black out my name, you know? Because, you know, your point was valid. I see what you're doing and everything like that, but number one, I wasn't jumping on any type of bandwagon. If you read what I said on my comments, which I'm sure you did, I don't understand how you thought that I was jumping on a bandwagon. And if you did or whatever, that's fine, but why not black out? Instead of exposing everybody on that group or whatever, why put that information on your video without blacking our names out or our faces out?
Okay, that's a very good question. Well, I can answer it anyway. Now, you understand something. You do understand that when you signed up on Facebook, you agreed to a terms of service. You do understand, correct?
Yeah, I understand that that's Facebook, but not on your personal.
I'm answering your question for you. You do understand. When you signed up on Facebook, you did agree to a terms of service. You do understand that, don't you?
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. Do you also understand that that privacy in their terms of service has been updated numerous times, but there's one part of the privacy statement of terms of service that has never been altered and never changed? The one that says when you signed up, you even clicked a little checkbox that said that you understand that anything that you post on that site or in groups is public information and can be visible to anybody. Did you understand that part when you agreed to it?
Yeah, I understand that part. I understand that
okay,
part.
Okay,
really,
but I'm saying,
well,
did you understand it? Did you understand it when you agreed to it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so now you're saying I understood it, I agreed to it, I know it didn't, but why did it happen? So maybe now you can explain to me why, now that we have made it clear that we're both on the same page as far as that whatever you put on Facebook, when you say I put up your, quote, information, will you please tell people what information?
Well, not necessarily saying information. You know, I'm talking about, like, my face, my name.
That term means something. When you say information, it means something. That's not just a word that you can peg any definition onto it you want. Information means something. Now, if I put up information, well, that means that that's something that we wouldn't have access to automatically. Your profile picture and whatever your screen name are available automatically as a condition of being on Facebook. You can't hide that. And your statements in the group are public once you put them out there, just like my statements are public. So there's nothing that's put out there that does not apply to everyone. So for you to say, why did I do X, Y, Z, would be the same as saying that somehow you've been submitted to some cruel scrutiny that nobody else is subject to.
That's, you know, yeah, the Facebook terms and all that, yeah, I understand that. But what I'm asking you, Jason, is, and the comments that you screenshotted of me, how was any of that jumping on a bandwagon when I was just pretty much simply asking, you know, if you're saying that you're not going to, you know, stoop to that level of responding, why would you do it anyway? How is that considering jumping? My thing is, you're putting these comments on there on your video stating that we're all on this bandwagon, we're all quote unquote these dick riders or whatever, excuse my language.
Okay,
that we're all riding Tommies, you know. How are my comments?
Don't put words in my mouth. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Don't make up things that I didn't say. You've been listening to other people too long when you start making up words that nobody said because you want to make it seem real, real bad, but the person didn't actually do it. But I'm just going to say this anyway, even though it never happened. I don't use profanity. I don't curse people out. I don't use that type of language that you just used. Now, you can use it here. That's perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with the language. But don't say that I said that. I never said anybody was doing anything of a profane nature. I simply said, take a look at the people who are on the bandwagon and empowering and endorsing. I use language.
Which is something that I was not doing, Jason.
Okay.
I was not jumping on a bandwagon or endorsing anything. That's why I don't understand why my comments were on your video. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, well, first off, first off, let's get something clear. I don't use that kind of language, and for you to sit up and come out and just say, because you basically said, no, I didn't basically say it, and I didn't even infer it. I didn't say anything even remotely close to what you just said. I just repeated what I just said. On the bandwagon, empowering and enabling. That is nowhere even close to the crude term that you used. Not even
okay,
close.
Okay, well, you know what,
I'm
big enough to apologize. I didn't mean to put words in your mouth to say that you said I was dick riding. Okay,
right,
scratch
I'm
that off. Let's pretend like I didn't even say that. But as far as the
I'm
whole bandwagon
pretend,
thing.
I'm not going to say that you were, you know, Conan the Barbarian. I'm not going to say you were doing that. No, that was not what you were doing. However, what I was doing was I was spotlighting anybody who made a statement that was ambiguous. It could be perceived, because it was perceived by me, as not being condemning. Because here's my real point, okay? People get online to enjoy themselves. People get online for whatever. This broadcast I put up, I take calls from people. They can talk, they can this, that, and the other. The problem is that most black people are dysfunctional, unfortunately, and they can't perceive or conceive of a interaction that doesn't end in conflict. They can't define themselves outside of it. So as far as they're concerned, it wasn't a good time until the police showed up. I don't come from that world. I don't come from a world where you can only be happy when there's conflict and misery. I don't come from that. Too many people, unfortunately, do. And because of that, they go seeking out trouble. I don't do that. You can take a look at all my posts, not some, not most, all of them, on Facebook, Twitter, and everything else. I don't target people. I don't target somebody who, and when I talk about news figures, well, hell, they're on a news site. But I don't sit up here and say, let me go make a video or something about somebody for no reason. Now, I've been attacked all this year for absolutely no reason whatsoever except jealousy and pettiness. And it was absolutely reprehensible. And the fact that so few people stood up and said, wait a minute, hold on a second. Let me correct whoever this person is starting all this nonsense. And that didn't happen. Now, in the video itself, do you remember what the comments were that you made? And this is very, very important. Do you remember exactly what I put in that video, what you said?
The comments that I made or from the,
yes.
From the other people?
The comments.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the first part that I saw, and I saw my face, and I was like, what the hell? I asked, you know, where's the video of you dissing the 19-year-old
girl?
No, it was on audio.
Okay, stop. All I wanted to know was, did you see them?
Yes, I did see them.
Okay.
Very clear.
Okay, can you tell me what you said? I will give you a few moments here to go to YouTube and go pull the video up yourself. I can't do it right here, right now, because I got all of y'all here. I will give you a few minutes to go yourself. I'll wait. I'll back on hold if you want me to. I will wait to pull that video up so that you can read to everybody exactly what you said, and let's see if it squares up with what you just said a few minutes ago about, well, it wasn't this way or that way. Let's read exactly what you said, and then let's see if it squares up the way. How about that? That's fair, isn't it?
That's completely fair. Let me pull it
okay.
up, and I'll read verbatim on what I said.
And I will sit here and drone endlessly while you are doing that and pretend that I'm I'll pretend that I'm being relevant over here. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, this is BlackChannel.net Radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. I'm online right now with Tammy from, I forget where she says she's from.
Washington.
Washington. D.C. or the state?
The state.
Okay, and she's in the state of Washington. Oh, well, say hi to Nicole Dunk for me. She's up in Oregon, but I hear I'm big as her house. I won't open any heavy letters from her. I won't open any envelopes that tick. If they came from her house, I won't open anything that ticks or rattles. Definitely nothing with ooze, funny-looking green dust coming out of somewhere. But Tammy, as you all can tell, isn't Amy. I asked her to call in was what I did. So she's not here by accident. There was a reason why I said, let me see if I can get this, because she's not here by accident. She had questions, and she actually asked them in a rather level-headed manner, which I don't mind. And I told her, well, you know what? You go ahead and call me. Now, here's the difference in case somebody asks. She's asking questions about me. She's asking questions about what I said. She's not asking questions about what a bunch of other people said. She said, TBA, you said XYZ about me. I want to know why you said XYZ about me. Fair question.
So this is the comment that struck it. Tammy Marie Halcom, here we go. While listening to this, I kept waiting for him to say, I am the danger. I am the one who knocks. I was referring to Walter on Breaking Bad. LOL, dude is fierce with his vocals, yo. But, yeah, this was lame. Who's going to think about a total stranger while thinking of their bills or getting pulled over? And I made one of those little faces. And for him to rant on and on about how he's not going to stoop down to the level of responding, I hate to bust your bubble, Jason, but the entire audio was a response, a rather angry and defensive response at that. Shrugs. That's what I said. And,
okay.
Yeah, I said now, that because you, because, I mean, like you said, why entertain, why even respond, why even entertain Tommy and talk about him or whatever if you said you weren't going to do it? Why stoop to the level and then do it? Just
okay,
like, why even make
the real question
why
is,
make the video?
I asked you a question about can you find us what you said? And let's see if it squares up against what you were claiming happened at the beginning of the call. Now that you just read to everybody what you just said about me, a guy who has
mm-hmm.
never said a word, let me say this one more time. A man who does not know you has never said a word about you, never said anything to you, and yet you came to the sky and fell down out of nowhere talking about me. So you want to talk about what I say in videos about other people. I posted what you said about me. Who told you to come talk about me? Here's the danger. The fierce buckles, yo. LOL. Who told you to do that, but you will be upset when I respond to you? Do you need therapy?
Oh, no, I mean, if you could have, I mean, if that offended you, you could have just came to me directly. Why put me in a video that's associated with somebody totally different? Like,
no, ma'am, I came to you directly. I sure did, didn't I? I got your undivided attention with that, didn't I? That was live and direct to you, wasn't it? So I did contact you directly. I just didn't go back and forth with you because I don't do that. Me.
I'm just saying, I mean, you made the video,
that.
I mean, which is cool
that.
And all, but why that. You could,
you're
like, black out the faces and black out the names.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying, like.
Okay, why didn't you overlook that thing at all and just not comment? Because if I'm going to black out your face and black out your name, I've given you anonymity, which means I could have just typed up those things from anywhere and could be lying to people and saying that this is what people were saying with no proof whatsoever of who said it. It's unsourced. So how do I prove to anybody that I'm not just lying? Because the other person was lying and I've proven it. They have no sources, can't show any proof. I showed proof of everything I said. That's why I had to do that. The same as if you make a video about me and show Jace Black made a video with me in it. I'm not going to sit up here and say that, well, why didn't you black out my face and black out my name? No, I did that. She's sorting it. There's nothing unethical about that. Nothing at all. I think what you're upset about, though, is that video is not very flattering. And you really should be asking yourself a few questions because you didn't ask any questions at all of the person who did all the attacking. You just joined in with them. Look what you're supporting. Look what you were enabling. And supporting it like it's a joke, like it's funny. That's not funny. F the black community is not funny. That's not cute. Don't ha-ha about that. Attacking a person who never said anything to you or about you, that's not a ha-ha moment. That's not a LOL minute. And you thought it was. With this juvenile, prepubescent immaturity, you thought that was funny. You thought there was something humorous about that. This is why we have world star hip-hop today. Because people like you find that kind of stuff funny instead of finding it repulsive. Who in the world posted this? This is stupid. Why are you attacking this man? But you didn't do that. You did take a position, and you did take a side, and I simply point out to people, this person has taken a side. Look whose side they took. Your comments were not innocuous. You started this call with a fraudulent statement. I don't see why. Yeah, you see exactly why. You just didn't think anybody was ever going to call you on it. You don't know me. You could have just ignored it, but you piled on everyone else who was supporting that mess and thought it was funny. Now, can you find anywhere where I have ever said anything to you before that day? If you can, I will pay you $100 and shut this microphone down. If you can ever find where I have ever said something like that about you anywhere, I'm listening.
No, you're right. You've never said anything, you know, and...
But you attacked me, a guy you don't know. And by the way, a guy who was in the right.
No, Jason, it wasn't an attack. It wasn't an attack towards you.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you that it was an attack. That's a white person telling us that what I said, when I said colored and darkies, that wasn't racist. I'm the person that it hit. That was racist. Now, you know this, I have never tried to say whether you thought that what I said was offensive or mean or invasive. I haven't made any caricature about that. If you feel it was, then I guess you feel it was. I'm telling you that you, first off, for you to sit up here and say what you just said about I didn't attack you. Okay, explain to me a nice way that you say those kind of things that you said. Tell me, what is the non-attacking way? You tell me, when was the last time you said something like that to somebody, they were happy to see you? Go ahead and explain that to me. I want to hear the non-attacking way.
A non-attacking way of saying it is just do your thing. Quit, don't worry about what anybody else is saying to you.
But
just do your own
said.
Thing. Screw what Tommy's saying to you. I'll tell Tommy the same thing. Screw what Jason's saying about you.
Okay,
just do y'all's
do
own
that.
Thing. Y'all are like this
First
whole
of all,
beef
you
between
do that.
You.
Oh,
this whole beef
That's
between
no.
you and Tommy
That's
is just
no. You're not gonna come on my broadcast and sit up here and lie like that. You are not going to do that.
Lie about what? Lie about what?
You just told a bald-faced lie, and you're not going to come on my broadcast and do that. This is what got you shanked, because you're that kind of person. You say a lot of statements that are lies, and then you go out and go repeat them as if they're true. Now, you tell everybody right now, since you just told that lie, that there was a beef between me and anyone else. You show me right now, where have I ever made a statement about anybody else, including the person that you named before yesterday, because they've been making statements and videos nonstop every single week since the beginning of the year. Tell me when I ever said anything about them. Show it to us right now.
I don't know. You know
okay,
what? Maybe yesterday was right quick
if you don't stop talking. You just sat here and told everybody that there was a beef and that there was a feud, and we asked you to show
well,
there, me what
there is,
you sat here and
there
said,
is
well,
one now.
I cannot. You just
there
sat here
is
and
a
said,
beef between you two now.
No, there's not. I commented to being attacked for 2 months. Yet, in your world, that counts as a beef. I would hate to see you as a detective for a police department in charge of rape. I'd hate to see you because you would be atrocious. Women would be getting raped everywhere, and you saying, well, she fought back. Okay, I guess it's a rape now. So the previous 15 who were so scared for their lives that they didn't struggle with them, those weren't raped. But the one who fought back, okay, I guess it's a rape now. Let me ask you something, Tammy. Where in the world have you been for the last 2 months? Or do you only have a radar that pops up when my name showed up? Where were you for the previous 2 months to spread all this wisdom that you got now? When I was being attacked for 2 months,
you know,
where were you?
I'm not saying that I have all this expertise on what's been going on between you two.
I'm asking where were you before now? In 2 months? You ain't seen nothing in 2 months? You're blind, deaf, and dumb in 2 months, but you got your senses back yesterday?
I really haven't been paying attention on what's been said about you or what's been going on between you and Tommy, but I'm just saying. And I apologize if I made it seem like, you know, that you've been on an ongoing thing with Tommy. But no, I'm specifically talking about what's
there
been going on since yesterday.
Thing. You're correct. So, there has been an ongoing thing. There's been an ongoing attack against me and other innocent people. And people like you sit back laughing. Instead of you saying, wait a minute, Let me consider the source. Let me check out the source. Let me look at the source. Before I say anything, let me check out the source before I say nothing. And you didn't do that. You jump on the bandwagon. Ha, 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 hee, LOL. And look what you are ha, ha, ha-ing and hee-heeing about. Look at that. I mean, look what you let happen to you. F the black community.
Well, I never laughed at that. I never laughed at that. I was
dark-skinned women from a trash can.
There's not an LOL moment when it comes to saying fuck the black community. No.
Excuse me. When you defended that, yeah, it is. Because you're defending all of that. Just like anybody who defends me, they're defending all of it. You're defending all of it. Now, if they want to say there are certain parts they like and certain parts they don't, that's going to be one thing to a certain degree. But once a person crosses a Rubicon where this is the only thing that they're known for, I am ruthless about black economics. I am ruthless about black finance. Ruthless. That's what's going to be on my tombstone. And if somebody wants to say that capitalism is bad, then that's a fair criticism to say that you couldn't back Jason Black without backing capitalism. Yes. That's a fair statement to make. You got a problem with capitalism, you probably have a problem with me. And you can't say that you back me, but you don't back capitalism. Can't say it. That you're going to back him and not back everything that was in that video, because that's the bread and butter. That's everything it came from. And you responded to them not by investing the source, but with everything about me. You didn't make one statement about them whatsoever. You said nothing. No, you didn't say a word. Everything you said was attempting to ridicule me. I asked him to say the danger. Let me see if I get some zingers in here. I wonder if the female that he cursed out, and I played audio of y'all with him cursing her, because he lied on me. I played the audio of him. F you and F the black community. She didn't curse that man one time. She didn't respect him one time. He cursed her out and went on a rant for a full minute, and you didn't even know about it, but you were ha-haing and hee-heeing and co-signing. And now you want to say, I'm not co-signing. I didn't co-sign. You're in that video because you co-signed. And that's the reason why nobody has been able to make a video like that about me, because I look at the source before I go off and co-sign anything. And that's why I'm standing where I'm at right now. This broadcast is not just the fastest growing internet radio program anywhere because I guessed my way through it. It's because it's that way because they got a person with some integrity now. And I may be sharp and I might be difficult and sarcastic. And you know what? Sometimes I may be harsh. But you ain't sit up here and show a bunch of flip-flopping videos about me. You're not going to show a bunch of videos about me where people I don't know. Now, I just said, let me pick something at random. Didn't happen and never will. You're not going to see me sitting up here making comments like you did. Even if it's somebody I disagree with, I was expecting him to say, the danger, LOL. That's so mature. Tammy, do you have children?
I do. Married with children,
Do you have a husband?
Married with children, yes, sir.
So what was that?
I am married with children. My husband's sitting next to me right now.
That's magnanimous. You'll forgive me if I have a hint of skepticism, but I think that's great. I really do. But what I am going to say is that, understand something. The internet is immortal. It's forever.
Yeah.
And I want you to think about what you posted there that day about somebody who was in the right and was on the right side, and think about what you were supporting that day and what you said, because you thought, well, it's group contagion. Everybody's on that side, so I'll just join them. And then 24 hours later, you're heading for the exits. Don't you stand by what you said that day now like you did then. Don't you stand by it now in light of everything that everybody knows now? Why don't you stand by your statements then and let everybody know that you made those statements about me and said nothing about them for the previous 2 months? And by the way, about your statement about responding, so you just think I'm supposed to just sit there and continue to let lies be told about me? I don't curse at people, ever. Weeks of saying I cursed people. I don't curse anybody anywhere. I don't use kind of language, which they could say the same. Oops, they can't. Not about their own mother. I don't do that. I donated to his documentary. He's got money that he got me. I have gotten a penny from him. I can show you the receipt for the money he got from me. He can't show you a penny that he given to me or anybody else. He can't show you a dime. Ask him if he can ever show you anything he got from me. And that's who you were backing. I hope he puts all the niggers in jail. She said, I'm going to play the white victim. And I said, you do that. That's what you co-signed, Tammy, with your LOL.
Well, that's see, this is the thing with me, Jason. It's the interwebs, I didn't know that
let me tell you
any of these would be taken so seriously. You know what I mean?
Let me explain something to you about me, okay? Because it's very serious. That's why we take it seriously. I love black women. I adore black women. I am going to live and die with a black woman. I'm also a pragmatist. Everything I hear. Sometimes I have to be political. Sometimes I have to be strategic. I can't always speak on everything I want to. That's not the way life works. You should know that as an adult. You can't always say everything that's on your mind in every single place, in every single instance. You have to weigh everything. That's what adults do. But I adore black women. I am black. Period. And I'm not going to sit up here And I'm not going to sit there and compromise it. That does not mean that I attack other people. What that means is when I find somebody who's no longer on board with what I believe in a manner in which I can continue to promote it, I do what an adult is supposed to do, and I get up and I walk away. I don't go back and forth. Don't take shots at them. I get up and I leave. I got up and I left. That's what you're supposed to do, because I'm not going to make a career out of attacking our women. I'm not going to sit up here and say that we can build an intelligent black society between the thighs of a European. I'm not going to sign off on that. I'm not going to sit up here and say that we're going to down all the dark-skinned black women to hell with that. Our dark skin is the only thing that matters. It's the only thing that makes us special. And the darker it is, the better. And I'm not going to teach our children to hate themselves. Yes, criticism is valid and warranted. And some criticism of these dark-skinned people, yes, is validated and warranted. It is. It's valid and warranted. But I'm not jumping no damn fences. I'm not hopping no streams. I don't have to attack you. But I'm not doing that mess. Craziest thing of all. Do you know the nuttiest thing in the world? You sat up there and co-signed somebody who got very unkind things to say about you. For nothing more than the fact you were born. And that's what you were co-signing. They got some unkind thoughts about you right now for nothing more than the fact you were born. Let me tell you something, Tammy. I'm the best damn friend you got on the internet. This microphone, the safest place you've got on the internet. Because when you come to this place, when you are a black person, the debt is stacked in your favor. If anybody else shows up, and you can't say that anywhere else. I am unapologetic about it. And that was what made what you did so atrocious. Because I'm the only person out there right now who is saying unapologetically black. You can sit up here and do all the jokes you want to, Tammy. I put up a story today about how black children, they've confirmed it now, officially black children are targeted for suspension at higher rate than anybody else. Black kindergartners, first graders. So you all can laugh at the way I talk, Tammy. I don't have a problem with that. You can laugh at my intonation and the way I speak. Go ahead and do that. That don't hurt me. You can make as much mocking as you want to. But let me tell you something, kid. The person that you were mocking me for, you backed the wrong horse. Because I got love for all black women out the gate. Period. End of discussion. I got love black women. The shade of Mariah Carey to Nina Simone to darker. And if I got to make a choice, understand, it ain't no choice. I don't play those games. And I'm not backing anybody who's going to promote that, period. Nobody. And that's what you did. You backed the person who is trying to pit people against each other and attack the person who is saying you're all together. That's what you did. You need to go and do some more research on that and find out what they think of light-skinned women. Find out what they think of all black women, regardless of skin color. You will never find any video of me anywhere where I've said anything negative about black women based upon their skin color. I say it based upon behaviors, and I got the right to do that because black women are my team, and I ain't never leaving it. Those are my credentials because they're not your women. Oh, wait a minute. They put that in the video, too, and Tammy co-signed that. I had a girlfriend once. Wait here, Tammy. You sound like you're a little exasperated. Would you like to leave now?
No. I'm listening to you, Jason.
Last
you know, we always want the last word, right? But I'm just saying, you know, Jason, I hear everything you're saying, and I, in any way, I wasn't meaning to, you know, attack you in any way, you know. And if I did do that, you know, I apologize if I attacked you. Those weren't my intentions, were to attack you at all. I listen to both of you guys, you know, and I don't take sides on either one of you. You know, there's some things that I like that Tommy says. There's things that I like that you say. Things that I don't like that he says, things that I don't like what you say. It's all everything, you know. But, you know, I just didn't think it would be taken so serious for, you know, my comments to be on your video and stuff like that. But you know, you threw it all out there to me. I respect what you're saying. I'm not even tripping off of that, you know. But
I'm just saying now.
What's that?
You just sat here and said, I listen to both of you.
Yes, I do.
I have one question for you. Do you consider yourself black?
Yes, I do.
What does that mean to you? Or should I say, how much does it mean to you?
It means everything to me. When
somebody says to you, quote, F the black community. Let me say this again. F community. Let me say it a little louder. F the black community. You ain't my effing community. F the black community. Now, after they say something like that, Tammy, please tell me.
You know, when I hear stuff like that,
Tammy, which part of that sentence Did you not understand?
I don't like that sentence. I don't like for somebody to say fuck the black community. But at the same time, Jason, the black community is fucked up. You know what I mean? It is.
At the same time.
But I personally wouldn't go to the extreme of saying fuck the black community. You know, sometimes you just like me, I'm going to do my own thing. You know, there's nothing that I can do to help out the black. I mean, there is things that I can do to help out the black community if I choose to do so. But I'm just into my family and I do what I need to do for my family, you know, and
okay,
I go on, you know. But
Tammy, you're sidestepping. Yeah. I asked you which of that statement did you not understand?
I understand. I understood it fully.
Okay. Tell me how you march lockstep with somebody and say, they said that, but I can agree with them on other things. Tell me how you make that leap of logic. I'd just like to know.
Well, I mean, some things I don't know, Jason. Some things you agree with, some things you
know what that is. You know what it really is? It's called religion, Tammy. It's called religion.
Well, let me ask you this, Jason.
When you have a belief system, Tammy. When you have a
when
belief,
when he made that.
Okay, Tammy, I'm talking. Religion is when you have a belief system, something that you cannot prove, but you feel. And you hold on to what you feel, even though we have just proven to you that what you feel cannot possibly be accurate. We just proved it to you. It cannot be. But you're still holding on to it, even though we just proved to you that the California starfish is not God. You said it could walk on water. It can even float. And you're still saying, well, yeah, I see that, but I'm coming back to beach for church services next Tuesday. Because if you can sit here and say black means everything to me, which is what you just did, black means everything to me, but I don't have a problem with somebody who told me I'm not part of your effing community, F the black community, and I'm cool. I'm still cool with them. Let me say this, Tammy, right now, in no uncertain terms, okay? Coexist with that.
I feel you. But can I ask a question, Jason?
You can ask one and I gotta go.
Okay. Let me say that yesterday was my first time hearing that part where he said fuck the black community. Before then I never even seen that video. I don't even know when that video was made. When was that video made?
2 weeks ago. I'm sorry, a little over 2 weeks ago.
So after he made that video and everything like that, you still weren't communicating with him after that at all?
Ma'am, I haven't spoken to this person. I have not called. I called their broadcast one time earlier this year, but only for the purposes of telling people that there is no beef or anything like that. Even though I knew this person had been saying all kinds of greasy things and whatnot, even though I knew this, I still did it anyway because I am a man. And as a man, you set the example. Should be doing is setting the example that I don't get involved and bogged down in nonsense. And when they realized that that wasn't going to work, then they just decided, well, hell, my numbers are still tanking. I better do something different. Let me tell you right now, there's a reason why they were talking about me for months on end. Did I know all this stuff was out there? Yes, I knew it. Did I say anything? No. I was doing my own thing. Well, why did you speak up now? Because it was time to clear the air. It was time. It was time.
Mm-hmm.
And my real thing is that I walked away back in October. I signed off in November. Why come the rest of you didn't? You didn't see enough by then?
No,
and now
everybody
wants to look at my video now and act like they're so surprised and so shocked. like I found something new and novel that nobody had seen before. And a lot of it wasn't, because they're trying to cover their tracks now and realize that they can't do it. But there's nothing that you're seeing now that you didn't already know. And people are asking me, why come I didn't? I'm like, hell, why come y'all didn't? What the hell kept y'all? But understand something. I don't make it a habit of going around and attacking other black men. Because as black men, we're at the bottom of the damn totem pole. Black men should not be attacking each other at all. If you have a difference with a black man, you get your ass up and you walk away. You don't sit up here and make videos about him trying to get your view counts up. If he says something you don't like or whatever, you keep walking. You don't make videos because he said something you don't like. That's setting an example. And a lot of black males benefited from my setting the example. Now I'm seeing another part of the example, which is enough. And what I'm just pointing out is so many people sat up here and co-signed that and laughed and ha-ha'd and hee-heed. They were more concerned with being entertained than they were with maintaining their own integrity.
And you know what? That's what I was in the entertainment mode. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like anything like I don't like Jason or no. It wasn't nothing like that. I'm gonna let you do your show after this. But I one thing I do want to say, like, because like I said before, I do sense a beef between you and him, and I just feel like both of you just, I mean, y'all are doing something good, and both of you are, you know, and just do what you do.
Yeah, let me
do
ask
you
something here. If you divorce your husband tomorrow and never speak to him again, does that mean that there's a beef between you two?
No, not at all.
Okay, so you keep saying I sense a beef.
Yeah, Jason, because of the videos and everything going on. Yeah,
okay,
I sense
you said videos.
The beef.
You said
everybody
videos
is sensing
you said
it.
Videos plural. Wait a minute, you just sat here and lied again. You said videos plural. Please show me where
videos. I'm talking about with your video, and then I don't know
okay,
if you've
I got
seen
one.
He's made a 3-part video. So I'm talking about with y'all's
ma'am,
videos
ma'am,
combined.
Ma'am.
That's what I'm
ma'am,
saying.
He's been
videos.
Making videos. He made five videos about me in the last four today, I guess. I don't know. But he's made 5 videos about me in just the last 2 weeks, 5 videos, and he has been talking about me on every single broadcast he's done, every single one. I have said nothing about him. I said nothing to him. He told people that every post I put up on Facebook or Twitter is about him. But I'm not, he said that, but the crazy thing about it is, y'all, he's not mentioning my name. So do you understand what that means, Tammy? What that means is that anything I post, he can just say it's about him. So when I posted up today about why I love black women, he said it's about him too. If you're going to let somebody get away with that, if you do not demand, hold on, show me where this is your name, dude. Otherwise, you're just paranoid. If nobody did that, and nobody did, except for Incandescent and John and a couple of other people, but the majority of you just went along with it. He told you that there was a feud, and you said, ooh, there's a feud. Why? Well, he said it. No, there's not a feud. There's just hate and animosity and envy. And you all should have called on that and said, whoa, hold on a second, dude. Time for you to show some maturity. This guy's not saying anything about you. Just went to his wall. He's not saying anything about you. Why are you trying to start something with this man? He didn't say anything about you. He didn't say nothing about you. Leave this man alone. He's not saying anything about you. Okay, you're worried about your numbers. Dude, find another way to get your numbers back. Leave this man alone. He's not messing with you. And all of you who let that slide and co-signed it, help that happen. And just understand, I want you to be very, very clear about something, Tammy.
What's that?
That person has a video waiting for you, too. Oh, I'm sorry. They've already made it. They already made it several times. Why don't you go over there? Why don't you do yourself a favor and go get educated about this and go over there and go take a look at some of their videos from the last few weeks. They've got some choice comments about light-skinned black women like yourself. They have some choice comments. And if you still can listen to somebody talk that way about you and still say, well, I'm cool with it, because black people, I guess, have just developed and perfected art of people shoveling crap down our throats, and we just get accustomed to the taste of it and learn to like the taste of it. When somebody is sitting up here telling you to your face, you're a nigger and F your community, if Strom Thurmond said that to you, I don't think you would be saying there are some things he says I agree with. I like his stance on tax cuts.
Well, I always, you know, think I didn't, how can I put this?
If that was Newt Gingrich who said that to you, you wouldn't have said, well, I like his stance on school vouchers. Some of his things, some of what he says I agree with. Gingrich just said, F the black community. Yeah, but I agree with some of what he said. I didn't like that part, but I agree with some of it. Really? Really? Tammy, I want to leave this on a good note. You are a basically good person. But I think you are suffering from ambivalence disease, where you're trying to be friends with everybody. And the problem with being friends with everybody is the person who is friends with everybody is an ally to no one.
I guess that can be somewhat true, but...
Somewhat? Wow. I think
somewhat true, yeah, I guess.
That ambivalence is manifesting itself already. I think that can be somewhat true. Back in the middle again, huh? But you know what? Go ahead and do that. Just understand, at some point, Tim, you're going to get tired of getting spit in your face. At some point. Either that, or maybe you might learn to like the taste of that too, though. I know I wouldn't. I want you to give us a call back, Tim. I want to say you are welcome to call me back anytime.
Cool.
And I hope you'll get a little more knowledge and information about that. I hope so.
For your own.
And do the same thing with me too, by the way. If you haven't If you haven't listened to a bunch of my videos, do the same thing. Get educated about these things. Start learning what it is you're co-signing and what it is you're objecting to, and then make a decision. Nobody else will tell you that. Stack me up. Check me out. Look me over. And if you feel uncomfortable about it, I'm the only person who will tell you, walk away. But don't co-sign stupid anymore. Thank you very much for giving us a call. Thanks for giving us the call here tonight. Brothers and sisters, let me explain something here. In the 21st century, it is imperative to all black people, and especially the head, the leader, the black male, it is incumbent upon us to understand. The only reason why I'm not going to call Tammy, I wouldn't talk to her in private, is number one, she's married. I just don't think that's cool. I wouldn't want anybody calling my wife. I know that. But we as black people have developed a taste for messiness. We've developed an affinity for wallowing in garbage and treating it like a delicacy. We have let ourselves be infiltrated and inundated with a messy mindset. One that says, if somebody attacks another person, it's not an attack, that's a fight. Instead of saying that's an attack, this person was doing nothing to you. Did you hear the way that she sat there with the ha-ha and the he-he? Even during a call, she can't take these things seriously. You end up getting cheated on. Because the man that you were with, and I'm not saying anything about her husband, I'm sure he's a fine, upstanding citizen. But when you don't take life seriously, that's how you get yourself put in precarious situations. Situations when you can't take things seriously. When people are up here telling you what they think about you, and you are saying, ha ha, he he, LOL. I want to tell y'all something. In all my years on the internet, you can only find a couple of times that I have ever used LOL. Only a few. And it was practically always mocking someone. I take life very seriously. I take things very seriously. It is life and death outside that door. And as you heard the callers call in about Detroit, about Chicago, about D.C., Atlanta, man, they're taking shots at us everywhere. They're taking shots at us everywhere. And we're ha-haing and he-heeing over co-signing foolishness. That's the part that ought to be upsetting you. Co-signing stupid. And that's not cool. That's why I didn't do it. That's why I'm not doing it now. So open up another phone line here. Caller from the 562, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, T-Bay, is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, man.
You heard that unmute. That was you.
Wow, that's cool. I'm Jay Post, Long Beach.
What's on your mind, Black man?
I just wanted to get your point of view. I had a tutoring business when I graduated from college. And
okay, so you have what business?
Tutoring.
Tutoring, okay.
Yes, sir. And my focus was on inner-city kids, which I did, by the way. And throughout my experience, I think that's one of the reasons that I folded so fast was to focus on inner-city kids, where I have to deal with parents who didn't care for their kids at all. There was a few times where parents and the grandparents of a kid kept negotiating the fee. So I did create the organization or the company because I do want to help our people. I'm very passionate in helping our people one way or another. But the thing was, I've learned is, as you have alluded in your video, it was a lot of hook-me-up negotiation where I went all the way from where I'm only charging $20 per hour, where I'm hearing folks in Orange County getting paid $50 an hour to tutor their kids. I went all the way down to one of the parents to $6 an hour because the kid was brilliant, just needed someone to push them. And I learned that I lost some thousands of money and time because of focusing on our people that doesn't really want to help their children.
Okay, so let me find out here. Do you have a question for me, or you just want to tell us?
No, I was just trying to figure out as far as from your experience, like how can you continue to be passionate and still serve our people, but at the same time, make money by getting everybody's money on the same token.
I'm not quite understanding exactly what you're trying to ask me here. Can you rephrase that then?
Oh, what I'm trying to say is that I want to make money as much as the next person. However, because of my experience by focusing on our people, I've lost more than gained some. And I'm trying to figure out is I don't want to lose helping our people or be passionate about it. But at the same time, I do want to make money. How can you find that fine line as far as continue to get assets or profit from it, but at the same time you don't lose that eye on the prize when it comes to helping our people?
Okay. You're quite correct. That's a philosophical question is what it is. Those are always the hardest to answer, and you'll spend the rest of your life trying to figure it out, and you will never actually arrive at a completely satisfactory answer. You simply have to arrive at one that you live with.
Right.
Okay, that's the first thing. I got to preface that before I say anything else to you. You have to just come up with something to live with.
What?
When I was a young fella, 16 years old, my God, has it really been that long? Yes, ma'am. I met my second millionaire by that time.
Right.
It's a white fella. And we were riding his brand spanking new fancy crew cab truck. Don't sell the white men in their trucks, but they just adore them. They would pass up a BMW to get a pickup truck. They would pass new BMW up to get a used pickup truck. Well, we're in a truck that he paid $30,000 cash for. Now, this was 20 years ago. $30,000 cash.
What?
For this truck. And we had a little extra time, so he was driving around to go check out his sites like he would usually do, and he had me with him this time. And I was just asking him about stuff. And then I asked him a question similar to what you just asked. I asked him, I said, well, what do you do if, you know, isn't your price? I was asking about the price because he was charging people tens of thousands of dollars to do services for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, aren't you ever worried about somebody saying no? I mean, the price is kind of high. And he said, let me tell you something, Jason, and I want you to remember this for the rest of your life. The price is the price. You don't ever step down on your price. Tell them what the price is. It's their job to figure out how to pay it. You tell them what the price is. If they can't afford it, you tell them, here's my car, call me back when you can. Bad thing about what you did is that as black people, we gain a reputation. Brother, you always quote the high price. Always, always, and stick to it. Unless people are coming by and shutting stuff off, okay? You always stick to high price. You never step down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can always quote a high price and step down. But when you start giving away a service that other people are getting 50, you were charging 20, but now you're getting $6 for it, don't you know you really just told them your service worthless?
Mm.
Dude, I mean, for $6... Really?
I know.
Man, I mean, that's what, a cup of coffee at Starbucks, depending on which one you get.
Pretty much.
A sandwich from Subway. And you're talking about how valuable what you offer is. Can't be too valuable. You step down from 50 to 20 to 6. Can't be too valuable. I didn't say you can't have some charity cases, but there should only be one charity case. Everybody else has to pay the freight. Why? Otherwise, you can't stay in business. You won't be able to stay in business. Do what you're doing right now, man. You cut your profit margin to a third. There's no way you can stay in business like that. You have a job is what you have. You don't have tutoring. You got some other job that's and this is just a little extra money. And what I'm saying is, hey, you're going, you won't be able to stay in business. You're cutting it too far.
I did, and
you're
supposed
to figure out how do I get it up to 50. Because you're starting at 20, you're supposed to be trying to figure out what do I need to qualify for the 50, so I can go snipe some business with people getting 50.
Right.
And so far, what I'm hearing is a roadmap to zero.
Yeah.
Because you are almost there.
I can admit to that. I'm not
you are almost at zero at this point. I mean, man, we are feeling like a brick. It's ugly out there, man. And black people, especially young black people, because you were not raised, I mean, I'm not beating up on you, okay? Don't get me wrong. I'm not beating up on you.
Oh, go ahead. No, it's okay.
It's what my man had said earlier from South Florida when he said that, you know, we got grown black folk and they weren't raised by a father or mother who owned the business. See, I've got four generation people in my family who own businesses. So I've heard people get told, get out till you got the money all my life, and now I'm doing it.
Right.
Not trying to be mean, I'm just saying that's business.
That's true.
But if you've never grown up with that, you've just grown up thinking every dollar, I got to get every dollar. And what you haven't been taught is that's not how business works. Do you know how many people walk into Locker and can't afford the shoe and have to walk out? Do you know how many people walk into Neiman Marcus, Dillard's, can't afford and have to walk out? Do you see those people running furiously around their stores to drop the prices to keep people walking out?
No, they're not.
Hell, they don't do that at Walmart. The price is the price. That canned soup is $1.18. If you don't have $1.18, guess what? You cannot leave this store with that can. No, the price is not a dollar. It's not a dollar, not a dollar ten. It's $1.18 plus tax. You either have it or you're gone. And as black people, we let people intimidate us. We let them intimidate us. Because we got ego issues. We have self-esteem issues. We don't be disliked. I can't tell them no. They might take it personally. Nonsense. Tell them no. And will value what you've got. Because guess what? You told them no, and they're going to go try to find somebody else to give it to them at that price. But all the other folks you're going to talk to, the whites and the Asians, are going to tell them hell no. And guess what? They'll be calling you back very soon. That's the way capitalism works. By you understanding that your job as the business owner is to charge the highest price you can. Their job as the customer is to try to get it for less than that, to get the best deal they can. You need to make sure that they understand I don't make deals. That's how you keep that little noose away. But if somebody does ask, you let them know this is the price. They will try to get you to come down, let them know, yeah, I really got to go right now. Here's my card. Conversation's over. Do you have business cards? No, you don't. You need to get some so that you can end the conversation in the way I just said. Okay? One of the reasons that you're uptight about this is because you're entering into a negotiation with no strategy. And that's they're breaking you down because they can see this guy, he knows what he wants to get, but he has no strategy, so I bet you I can get less than that. And they're just kicking the crap out of you until they finally get it.
What?
So it's time for you to have a strategy. If you have a cell phone that's exclusively for business, do that. But don't you ever sit on the phone. Don't make me sit up here and put my foot through this microphone and kick you in the back of the head. Don't you ever sit on a phone with anybody and argue with them over your price. Now, about the little kid, you said they're brilliant and these folks are hard up for cash and whatnot. I don't know how much I believe they are, but let's just say they are.
Let's just say they're not, since I actually...
Okay, let's say they are. Let's just say they are. That should be the only one. Everybody else pays the freight, is the price. Don't argue with them. Now, if you're charging as low as you are, that means you're not as good of a tutor as you probably need to be. Because when you're good at something, you charge top dollar. And you have confidence.
I was wrong.
You have confidence because you know how good you are. You charge a bargain basement price when you're getting a substandard product. You don't charge bargain basement when you've got top billing. You don't do that.
I agree. I mean, I think I can say that I'm beyond above average because I can say right now I got over a dozen kids in college that never thought of college, but I helped them to get there. Like I said, my Achilles heel at that time was I really want to help our people. And that was wrong for me because I put my morality and everything else before thinking of the money.
I've got another fella in the chat room there, Sir Greatness. He's actually had touring business before. You probably need to chat with him, okay? Because I know you're in the chat room and he's in there too. He goes back years at this, okay? So he's got experience at this. Why don't you holler at him?
I will. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I've given you our general business advice because this is something you can use anywhere in any business that you go to. But as far as, I'm not downing you. What I'm saying is that I got some questions about your tutoring. If you jumped to do half price, maybe you're in the wrong area or focusing on the wrong areas, or maybe you don't have as much confidence as you should have, or maybe that there's something lacking in your game there, and that needs to be addressed so that you start charging the full price that you need to be charging. That's what I'm looking at, because if I were a CEO of a business and you were one of my franchises, I'd be looking at saying, wow, we're actually charging an eighth of what we should be getting. We're charging an eighth of what we should be getting. We're getting $6. Everybody else is getting 50. So we're charging about an eighth of what we should be getting. Now, if a business was run like that, one of my stores was only getting an eighth of what the others were, but he's in the same city, guess what? I'm on the first thing with wings to go find what's happening. I'm not going to walk in there and start firing people necessarily from where I walk in, but I want to know what's going on. Let me stick around for a little bit and see why we're lagging. Did you talk to people? Yes, I did. Well, what are you doing? I'm charging $6. Oh, really? And I'm like, if we can't get more than $6, maybe we need to close this location.
Well, TBA, I'm not going to disagree with you because you hit pretty much everything that I just learned. It took me this long to actually learn all those things. I went into business pretty much without any knowledge. Like I said, I don't have family members who own businesses who can show me, or I didn't get any mentor to show me otherwise.
Most young black people don't. And like I say, until they meet me, they don't meet anybody who even says anything about it. But understand something. You learn by doing, okay? All I do is give you advice and say, hey, point this in that direction. And you learn by doing. Remember that more than anything else. Don't worry so much about some of the other technicals. You learn by doing.
Right.
You're not making enough money for this. So what do you need to be doing? We need to raise this price and stick to it and start working on that. But what I want you to do here, like I say, just shoot a message to Sir Greatness in the chat room.
I did it.
Okay, yeah, and you guys to hook up, and he can talk to you in depth because he's been there. He called me 4 years ago, and now he's off and running. So he's been there. He's got a lot of experience you can benefit from.
Sounds good. I appreciate your advice.
This is the only radio broadcast in the world that talks about to people about business and then can send you to somebody who can actually talk to you about it. Nobody else does this. We do this every week. This is just how we live. Thank you very much for joining us, brother. I appreciate your call. Please check back with us and let us know how it goes.
Will do.
And Black First, as always, I am way over here, but I'm going to try to get another couple of phone calls in here. At least I want to. Wow. Caller from the 203, you're on live for the Black Channel. from the 203. You're on live with the Black Channel. I recognize area code. That's Connecticut, I want to say. 203 is Connecticut. What's Connecticut playing on my phone tonight, I wonder? Maybe they've been abducted. Try one more here. Caller from the 510. You're on live with the Black Channel. Now they're playing on my phone tonight. Caller for 510-706. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, 510 has been abducted, apparently, which is really, really odd. Oh, well. Caller from the 845, you're on live with the Black Channel. I pressed the number one. Was that what happened? You wanted to just listen? Call from the 845. We can hear you chewing. That's very odd. Caller from the 845-249. You're on live. If anyone sees the caller from the 845-249-0384, let them know that they've been abducted. We'd like to at least try to help them out. Maybe they've been waiting so long, I don't know. Things in depth, so I want to thank everyone in advance for their patience. I try to deal with these things in depth. Caller from the 404, you're on live with the channel. Caller from the 404, you're on live with the Black Channel.
I'm just listening.
You're just listening. You could have said the first time. I like to try to give my audience credit for being the smart one out there. But sometimes, y'all, sometimes you just have me wondering, really. I'm only going to try a couple more phone calls. If people are just playing on the phone, though, like I say, you know, some of those immature people, then we'll just do it tomorrow. Caller from the 786, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Oh, no, this, I already talked to you. I was just listening.
I want to ask why they're not press one, because Blog Talk, of course, is in revolt against me for whatever the reasoning is. I don't know why. Caller from the 702, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, Jason, it's Devontae Douglas, calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Devontae Douglas.
Oh,
that
sorry.
Name sounds...
It that is, sounds but quite, you sound it wrong. Familiar.
Where yes. do I know that name from?
You just unfriended me on Facebook. I mean, you refriended me on Facebook.
I refriended you.
Yes, because I hastily posted a post about Melissa without checking all the videos and everything. This is probably about.
And I think I had you call in. Did I have you call in?
Yeah, me call in, and I called in.
And how did that conversation end? And how did the last conversation that you and I had end?
They all ended pretty well.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
Okay. What's on your mind, Black man?
I don't know. I'm.
You don't know?
Like, just look. Well, no, I do know. That's something I say that I probably shouldn't. I try to work on that, because when you say I don't know, that means you don't know. But I was just, you know, listening to you, and yesterday I was actually listening to a video I seen from. Tommy Sotomayor. It was a little confusing because at first I was thinking, because I had heard the last time you were on the show, and it was understandable. I kind of figured what you were doing was just, you know, being cordial. And it was understandable. It didn't mean that you agree with everything that he does or that he did, because I don't. And when I listened to that statement when he was making about F the black community, F black women, you give people leeway by saying, I understand what he's saying. He's saying F a certain part of the black community, but he's not saying that. But he, you know, that's what you take it as, because you want to give him the leeway, because I want to believe in all black people, not just some. I want to believe that we all have a redemptive quality in us somewhere, somehow, some way. I want to believe that one day we will get it right.
Well,
I'm not saying that's going to happen.
I think that's an admirable ambition, but brother, by definition, we're not all going to get it. So who are the people that you write off and say, okay, that person's too far gone, we need to just bump on them?
That happens a lot, but it still doesn't change.
Yeah, but I'm saying it happens a lot, but that wasn't what I'm asking. I'm asking, at what point do you say that person is too far gone, we need to give up on them? Because you said, I want to believe in all black people. I want to have faith in all black people. Okay, but when do we say, okay, I had enough faith in them, this person is irreparably broken, and are now a liability, they're now a liability to the body politic? At what point do you say that? Give me an example.
I'll say recently, and I'm saying this because I just, you sent me your, I just looked at it because I was listening to you. That's why I called in, because you sent me the message saying that, here's my new video, and you're now, you know, unblocked. And I already had watched the video, but I was watching yesterday. I got about, I'll say, 130 minutes in. And at that point, I kind of just left a message like, okay, you know, you're a great entertainer. I could see, you know, from what I observed over the last few months, changes in your behavior. I'm not saying it comes from, I mean, actually a little more than 2 months, but I'm not saying it comes from anywhere, because I haven't sat down and talked to that man and asked him any questions, so I don't know. I did call him to the show, but I didn't get on. And the behavior is almost emulating what some people would call, you know, white supremacy. It's very much so emulating it. It's no longer satire. It's no longer, you know, kind of being sarcastic to try to get a point across. It's actually a feeling there that wasn't there before. You hear it in his voice, and you can see it in his mannerisms, that I think he's starting to believe it now. And at that point, I said, no, he is a great entertainer. What he was doing was working at a point. But now I think he's lost and I'm very confused. So at this point, I no longer wish to be entertained by him. And I pretty much said, and that might be my last video.
Entertained.
No, I don't.
I no longer wish to be entertained. Brother, do you know how much I wish I get that sentiment spread to more black people? To get them to finally say, I no longer wish to be entertained. Because when somebody's appeal to you is strictly, when you listen to somebody and they're telling you serious things, and they're telling you to take action on serious things, then you have to tell yourself, but then they say things that you know aren't right, and you start giving yourself little excuses why it's okay. Oh, they're just entertaining. They're just entertaining. I'm telling you all right now, my broadcast is not entertainment. I've never said it was. I've always said that it's not. This is not entertainment. If you want entertainment, you got other options. But when you have to start telling yourself, whenever people say off-the-wall garbage, and you have to keep saying that was entertaining, well, I'm sure he didn't mean it that way. I'm sure he didn't. It's kind of like you're with an abusive husband, and you keep making excuses for them, and you keep making excuses and more excuses, and finally he's killed the woman. I no longer wish to be entertained. What you really mean by that is I'm no longer going to make excuse for what I'm hearing. I'm not going to do it anymore.
True.
I'm not going to do it anymore. Now, if you are really in love with single mothers who are happy to be single mothers, and they are just not going to give up unprotected sex, then that's going to be one problem, okay?
Okay.
That'll be one problem. But if you don't like me saying bastard makers, you know, that's be a problem. Accept it as it is, because I'm serious when I say it. And accept as it is. You don't have to make excuses for me. And what I'm saying is that that's when you get into the religion thing. I'm sure he didn't mean it like that. The Quran makes it very clear what they mean by jihad. Jihad is spiritual. Jihad is internal. But it is also physical at the edge of the sword. Now, when you have to sit up here and start making excuses for what someone clearly said, that's when you need to be asking yourself, man, do I really need to be backing this? And what I'm saying to you is that eventually somebody says something you can't back at all. That no matter how much, quote, good they've done, that the bad side, the downside of this is simply too steep. And what I'm saying is I don't go on jihads against people. I don't sit up here and make a bunch of videos about people. I don't do that. You can't find anybody that I made more than one video about, with the slight exception of Zane. Well, no, actually, I think I only made one video about her. Yeah, I only made one. I didn't sit up here and follow up behind either. I made one. I don't do that kind of stuff. And what I'm saying is that with black people have a willful ignorance about us, that we will sit up here and make an excuse over anything. We will make an excuse over anything. And what I'm saying is what you've done is the right thing. Let's stop making excuses. And I understand that may cut on me too. You know what? Perfectly fine. Call me up. Talk to me about it. See if I really did mean it the way I said it. I promise you I did. When you hear a video of mine, it ain't a joke. You all have never heard me say that something I said on my broadcast, oh, that was controversial. Well, I was just joking. I was being facetious. No, I'm not. I'm not the guy who does that. I'm not facetious. If I said it, I was very serious in saying it. Other people cannot say that. Now, there may have been positions that I've taken in the past that I may have been wrong about, or maybe there may have been things I wasn't completely accurate about. Okay, I'll take it on that. It's fine. Don't have a problem with that. But if there's something I say is a core conviction, nobody is out there saying, I'm sure he didn't mean it like that. Maybe you don't feel as serious and as deep about it as I do, but I meant it. I meant it the way I said it. And if it offends people, so be it. But I meant it the way I said it. Now, understand, now, you've been watching some things, okay? You know me. I don't go around attacking people. I don't say anything about anybody. They can't say the same thing. They've got channels devoted to going off attacking people for no reason. All I did, what I'm saying is that I could understand why there would be concern. I just wish that more people had the same concern that you did. I wish more people did. I wish more people like you asked more questions, because it's possible that this wouldn't have gotten, they wouldn't have been allowed to go on as long as they had if more people had stopped wanting to be entertained and had started demanding, wait a minute, I want some answers on this. No, the answer you gave me is bull crap. What's really going on here? This isn't any way for a grown man to be acting. The behavior is too suspicious.
That is true. I might add, one thing I did notice is, and this is the thing with me, I stopped being interested with other people that I can't look in the mirror and recognize a long time ago. And it's a hard road because they think you don't like them. I don't have nothing against you. I'll always be cordial with you. I'll speak to you. I'll even engage you. Some of you are even my associates because we have common interests. But other than that, we can't be friends. Not at this time, because I watch my people, and it's a horrible sight. But our numbers are so obscure, it's unbelievable. And believe me, people better go read La Raza's Edict. That's what I call it. They made back in the 70s. They're doing what they plan to do. People get their numbers are obscured only because the first generation Hispanics and Latinos that come here. If you look at the second and third generation, they're doing almost as good as white people, if not better. The prison rate's lower.
I mean, what you just said right there that folk don't understand, man, in 10 years, not 20, in 10 years, California is a wrap.
Yeah.
Colorado is a wrap. Yo, you thought I was going to stop in California. Colorado.
I'm in Las Vegas right now.
Oh, well.
And it's about 50,
I was about
50.
To say, Nevada, 10 years, that's going to be a wrap. Hell, that damn hotel union is showing you that.
Yep.
That hotel union is showing y'all out there, man. Now, the Latinos running that thing is strong.
Our
am
logo
I,
is
you,
a,
am I telling the truth on that,
baby?
I'm going to say, am
yeah,
I telling the truth
on that,
though? Yeah, you know I'm talking about that
they,
hotel
they
union.
They changed our logo from all the
is,
workers. Oh, sorry about that. I was going to say they changed our logo from all the workers standing out front, like in a colorful way, to a Hispanic one holding a baby. That's our new logo.
What does that tell you?
That
they
tells
changed
you I know
the
who
logo. They changed the logo and wasn't a damn you could do about it.
No, it has nothing to do with the union. It's just a Hispanic woman that looks like Mary holding a Hispanic baby.
Now you said they changed our logo. Are you with the union?
Yes.
Are you paying dues?
I've always paid dues, but I'm rethinking that right now.
So understand what I mean, though. You are paying for that logo.
I know.
You paid yourself removed from your own union's logo.
Yes. That is true. And they're pushing every policy and procedure that's not going to benefit me at all.
But it's going to benefit them. Isn't
that,
that
is true.
How long have those little Mexican illegals been cleaning those hotels? If the hotels, I think, is that with the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union? Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
The
Hotel
one
and Restaurant. Yeah, the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union. So you all know I'm not just making this up off the top of my head. Because, like I say, I mean, the reason why he and I keep talking about it is because that union is strong out there, y'all. That union is strong.
The strongest one.
I mean, they basically pick the politicians. That union is strong. It's not good.
It's not
solid. It is strong. Yep. Harry Reid basically keeps them in his back pocket. They are strong.
Yep.
And that tells you what that – it tells you what those little women working in those hotels were thinking 20 years ago. And my question is, can you find a black version of that?
You cannot. And, Jason, get this. I start to notice something, and I have no envy or animosity because they're doing what they're supposed to do, and I respect that. Their children are coming back from UNLV, from UNR, from UCLA, and they're coming back as, you know, VPs. They're coming back. One just became the president of my hotel. They're coming back, and they're taking over. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And when we had Historic West Side locked up, we gave it all away. Now it's like 70% Hispanic and 30% black. And there's a statue of Martin Luther King sitting right on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Cary. And every day you go out there, you're going to see the Arabic guys that own the gas station. And you're going to see a whole lot of Hispanics getting ready to go to work.
And Dr.
From
King is there as a relic.
Yep.
Isn't that amazing? Dr. King is sitting there at relic. And do you know why that happened? That happened because you can put up a damn video. I mean, you can put up a damn statue. But if you didn't put up any type of business, you do not own and control the economy in your neighborhood. If you don't own and control the economy, nothing else is going to happen. Nothing.
Well,
How can you control the houses on the street if you don't own the business that pays the wages of the people who work and live in houses on the street? How are you going to do that?
That's what I was going to say. They owned businesses there before, but they relied on when the Italians were in power. About in the 80s, all those businesses started to falter when the Italians lost power. Because they had a stronghold in the black neighborhood. And I'm not going to lie, the Italians kept the blacks in their back pocket. All those businesses were black businesses. But so when the Italians lost power, all those black people couldn't hold on to their businesses. Moulin Rouge, look at that. That's a relic. That should have been rebuilt, and it should have been plentiful. And when what's-his-name came out for Detroit and brought the Dean, he dies a year later. The two white guys come out and turn it into, I mean, what was the Fitzgeralds? The two white guys come out, his rivals, buy it up and turn it into D's. Now it's one of the most profitable hotels downtown. And he was the first black man to buy a casino in Nevada. And it was just so sad to see him, die like that, because that was his plan. That was his idea. His name was Don. I can't remember his last name. But that's where the idea came from. That's why it's named D's. Everybody thinks it's because of the brother Derek's name, but no, because of Don. Don, what was Don's last name? He was really big mogul out in Detroit. He died, I think he died of brain cancer.
We as black men, there's too many stories like this, and what I'm saying is you can't survive in every city that your people are in have a story like that. In Miami, the Cubans aren't living low like that. And anybody who's been to Miami will tell you, they are living every bit as good as the white folk are. You go to Palm Beach and West Palm Beach, they're living every bit as good as the white folk are. Houston, Dallas, they're living every bit as good as the white folk are. Stomping grounds. I'll tell you all about that. All about that all damn day. Back 95 and 96, I'll tell you all about that. And we as black people cannot name one brother, not even one city in this country where our numbers and our economic status are growing. As a matter of fact, we can't name one city where our economic status is growing.
No, we can't. It's everywhere. It's just faltering and falling.
Even if our numbers were stagnant or staying the same, at least if our economic status was growing, then we'd be okay, you know? But that's not what's happening. And those little old Hispanic women, man, and little old Mexicans and Latinas, they went to work in those hotels, and dude, they had a plan. And you all also know that all them bean pickers and all those strawberry pickers out there in California, they got a plan too. When they unionize, it's going to be super strong. It's going to be super strong.
And
they are
not
going to get together immediately. They're probably going to form a co-op union with the hotel and the restaurant workers. So they got the game locked up from the field to the restaurant to your table. They got the game, they have the game locked down. You got to go through them to get anything done.
Yep.
Anything. And look at us. Hell, Aaron Mooser just lost control of his own cartoon.
Wow.
Should we even call it his own cartoon anymore? If you don't control it, is that your own cartoon anymore?
No.
We have to use proper language. Man, can you really even say this is your own cartoon if you don't control it? Man. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Well, I only wanted to say one thing. I always watch Dr. John Heron Clark, and I believe it was his last video he filmed before his passing was, can we be African again? Not just here, not just in Jamaica or in Belize or in Ghana or in Nigeria, but worldwide. Can we be African again? And gentlemen, always, Jason. It's nice talking to you.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother. And Black First, as always, African again. Brothers and sisters, I know we're going to make it through this. I know we are. I know we're going to survive this. I don't think it, I know it. But there are a lot of people who don't have faith in us. There are a lot of people who are already pitching their tents and throwing their lot in with everybody else because they think the game is over. They think it's a done deal. And I am telling you that even despite what we're seeing, this is the horrible and beautiful, yes, it can be horrible and beautiful, process of destruction for creation. These things have to be torn down. And sometimes people have to be left behind in order for us to move forward. I put up every day, and I will, a black female fitness motivation. I intend to eventually change that. At least my plan is to morph that over into black male economic motivation. Black male business motivation, something like that. And the reason why I did that is because I don't think we're going to make it. I know we are. I know we are. I don't just have a belief or a faith in my people. I know my people. I know my people. We've got problems. Yes, we do. But this is my team. And I'm not going to abandon my team. Not now, not ever. This is what it's going to be. Put those up for black women because I believe in black women. This mutated, horrid, putrid, rank, reeking creation that's walking around here right now, that's not black womanhood. Sister Coretta Scott King, that's black womanhood. Mother Harriet Tubman, that's black womanhood. Ida B. Wells, that's black womanhood. Atella Shabazz, that's our black womanhood. Ruby Dee, that's our black womanhood. And I have the stone cold knowledge that they are worth standing and fighting for. And all of you as my people, all of you as my people, you are worth every bit of it. Because I do believe we're going to get to the promised land. I know we are. I know we're going to get there. We will not all get there. All of us are not going to make it. But that is simply life. The real question isn't we all get there. The real question is will we as a people get there? Same thing Dr. King said. We as a people will get there. But we're not going to get there if we keep making the same dumb mistakes over and over and over again. Brothers, read your contracts. Sisters, read the fine print. Stop being so trusting of people. Trust, but verify. Make sure that this person's integrity is okay. Make sure it's intact. Make sure it's actually there. Be certain of that. I'm the only person who will tell you that. And more than anything else, you don't have the right to give up on your people. I don't have the right to give up on them. I don't have that. None of us has the right to look at videos of Dr. John Henrik Clark and Malcolm X and then to turn around and give up on our people. None of us have that right. Nobody does. And I want us to stop making excuses for it. Can we be African again? Yes, Dr. Clark, we can be. Hell, we already are. It doesn't matter whether you're an African in Africa, an African in America, or an African on the moon. He's an African. I do this because I want you to believe in yourselves again. I want you to believe in yourselves. You are the African people. If you get your life together and get your act right, everything else comes together from there. I hope things turn out okay for Aaron. I don't want him to lose control of the Boondocks. I don't want him to lose his motion picture rights. I hope everything comes together for him. I really do. Because he's a young black man. And it sounds like he got caught slipping. I hope it was a typical story. I just hope it wasn't. We need as many powerful black men out there. We need as many powerful black people out there in the interest of black people as we get. And this includes tonight's broadcast of blackchannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble and humbled servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and my sisters from around the world, black is forever, and you are my people, and proud.